everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here, and we are back with another Survivor Roundtable here, Roundtable number 4, and I'm so excited because this is the day that the Survivor cast has dropped officially. So we have so much to talk about and so much to look at here today with our panel, as we are going to be talking about the Survivor class of 2014. And we're going to be talking about Tony and Sarah and Jeremy and Natalie here with this panel. Let's meet everybody here who's with us today. Of course, very excited to have with us to talk some Survivor. Here is Jenny Autumn. Jenny, how are you?
I'm great. I was with you guys last week for the Circle podcast, and I was sick then. I'm still sick, but I'm improving. So
okay.
I'm glad to be talking Survivor, and I'm glad that we got some more photos and bios today. So okay, I feel a
photos?
Little lucky.
Great photos to talk about.
Amazing photos. Yeah.
Of course, that we are very excited to have here with us on a roundtable. The great Haley Strong is here. Haley, how are you?
I'm doing well. I can't believe you invited me to one of these to bring down the knowledge and the reputation of this entire podcast network.
Who's your person tonight that we're going to talk about? Do you have a favorite of the four that we're going to talk about?
Jenny.
Yeah. Perfect.
Oh,
I love you.
Okay.
That was my favorite answer.
Great answer.
I'd say Natalie. You want my personal rankings right now? We're going Natalie, Jeremy, Tony, Sarah.
Natalie, Jeremy, Tony, Sarah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Of course.
That's me at the top.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's just a given.
Very excited to have with us here a man who has already changed his phone wallpaper to be season 40 photos. Here is Matt Liguori. Matt, how are you?
This is the hottest cast ever, and these pictures today just took my breath away. How could I not
so
make them my phone background?
Cast. Hottest
they
cast
are,
ever.
Every single one of them, or most of them, are just beautiful. I these pictures were great. I'm so excited that we got these today. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. We have, of course, with us, usually we get to talk Big Brother with him, but he's here to talk some Survivor. Here is Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
I am very psyched to be here. It's fun to just relax and take it easy and talk with some survivors. See, this is the best time to talk with me before the show has started and starts to irritate me. I feel like, Rob, that's just a general rule.
Okay. Brett, I was going to ask you before I introduce you, did Survivor have Annie Leibovitz on location to do all of these press photos?
They look amazing. They actually put in the money for this because, like Matt said, literally everybody, almost everybody, looks amazing.
The multiple outfits.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. Really good. Okay, so all right. So we'll see how long this show goes before Brent gets real shady and tells us who had the worst cast photo. We'll see if we get to that tonight.
I thought that was what we were talking about tonight. I thought we were just here to do the critiques of the photos.
That's what we'll do with Bryce in a couple of weeks. But excellent. We are going to talk about these four players, but of course, we want to hear from you that we have our YouTube open. We're on Periscope. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitch. We're streaming live. And of course, many of you guys are listening to the podcast after the fact. If you want to join us for one more roundtable talking about Survivor, I will be back on Monday night with one final panel. We're going to talk about all of the one-time players who won in the 30s. That's going to be Michelle and Adam and Nick and Wendell and Ben coming up on Monday night. So be on the lookout for that. And then we will have.
You mean you're going to miss The Bachelor to podcast about Survivor?
It's going to be early, 7 p.m. Okay. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. So be on the lookout for that. So good reminder, Haley. And then on Thursday night, we will have our final Circle Roundtable talking about episodes 9, 10, 11, 12 of The Circle coming up tomorrow night. That's going to be at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you want to join us live for that, had a lot of fun on our Circle roundtables the last couple of weeks. Jenny, you made such an impression on Tim.
He made such an impression on me. Like, it, just so much better to even just talk to him, like, on a podcast besides just watching, you know, how amazing he is on The Circle. And, you know, I flattery gets you a lot of places, and the very fact that Tim would catfish as me, you know, he's my new favorite person.
Has he done that yet? Did he start yet?
No, okay, like almost immediately after that podcast, I got, he like liked a photo of mine from like a couple months ago. So I like, I took a screenshot and I'm like, he's already scouting photos for his catfishing account. So it's great.
Okay. All right. So Matt, a lot of stuff dropped today. Can you give us the rundown of everything that us Survivor fans were able to check out today?
Yeah, from what I saw, we got obviously the cast photos came out today, which for me, that was like the most anticipated thing. I could not wait for cast photos. It's just you want to see these people like updated pictures. You want to see them right before they're about to play the game, what they looked like, what they're wearing. And a lot of them are wearing things pretty similar to what they wore last time, which isn't a surprise. But we got that. Did we get any interviews with? Yeah, we got the ET Canada interviews, of course. Spent a good majority of the day watching some of those. And we also got, I think, just a couple of other interviews. Jeff was talking about the twist and whatnot. So a pretty fun day. And I don't know why I didn't see it coming. Maybe because the circle's in the way. But yeah. It was a lot of stuff today.
Kind of snuck up on us. Yeah, the ET Canada has 20 interviews up with the cast. They are lengthy. They are real good interviews around 7-8 minutes each. So a great place to spend some time as we are getting closer and closer to the premiere. We got our bios as well, but we also learned today some more about the fire tokens. Dalton Ross had an interview with Jeff Probst, and I'm so excited that we have this panel here to explain to me. I still don't get the fire tokens.
Don't look at me.
Anybody? I haven't heard of them yet, so this is a fun ride for all of us.
Want to attempt to explain from what I understand, everybody gets a fire token. Okay, everybody gets a chip here. All right, here's your fire token, Brent. And then you get voted out and you give your fire tokens to somebody else. But then people on the edge of extinction then are doing something. Are they're buying stuff for the people, but they don't have fire tokens. So
they willed them all away.
Yeah. How do the people on the edge of extinction, do they just have the stuff?
And I think they earn them, right? They can win them. They can earn them in different tasks or whatever they're going to keep them busy with. Is that what it is? Or
no, that's like when you said that, Rob, I had like instant flashback to Highway to Heaven, where like, you know, Jonathan has the stuff, you know. It's sorry, it was such a terrible reference. Like, it's such an 80s reference. Like, anyway, no, I don't know if they have the stuff or not. They apparently have fire tokens, though. That's that's the way it works.
And my question is, like, we're gonna do this with 45 minute episodes as well, like, right? Now there's like this whole
and
other
all these people and extinction check-ins.
I'm still waiting for the surprise that's not the case, but
well, we can only hope that, you know, like, hey, to check out CBS All Access for to see how this week's Edge of Extinction ended up playing out, and we end up getting more of that on, so at least where we can see it and have a chance to understand. Because Haley, it seems like that also then the people on the edge of extinction, they need the fire tokens because they are purchasing things that are going to make it easier for them to get back into the game. I thought at first, like, oh, that whoever has the most fire tokens on the edge of extinction is going to be who gets back in the game. But I guess they're buying then things that will help make it easier for them to win the Edge of Extinction challenge.
I am truly confused right now. Yeah. All right. We all are. Why? Like, for what reason are they doing this?
Yeah. And I think that a lot of people feel like, okay, well, this seems like it's interesting. We don't know how they're going to pull it off. We don't know how we necessarily
are they going to pull it off. It doesn't feel like they're going to based on this description.
And it's just strange that they, you know, obviously they've already tested Edge of Extinction on another season, but they didn't want to test this on another season.
Like, I guess. Why don't they just leave everything alone? What they should have done with season 40 was just one world it, have everyone on one beach and call it a day and say, have fun, everyone. We'll see you soon.
Interesting. So you feel like that would have been better where then you could have had Rob and Amber interacting and then all these I think that they want to,
because they're married. Like, Ethan would vote me out in an instant if he had a chance.
Ethan.
Sorry, yeah, also Ethan Zahn would probably do it too. He would meet me and be like, I hate her. He's the nicest guy on earth, and he would still be like, not for me, thank you.
Okay. Matt, have we learned anything interesting from any of the people that we're not going to talk about here tonight? Did you get any interesting tidbits from any of the interviews that you came across today?
Everyone has kids.
Yeah.
They all have kids. I'm so sad. I'm going to cry out here because I'm leaving my kids at home. And I'm like, first of all, I mean, very much appreciate them all leaving their kids at home to come out here and play this like epic season. If anyone didn't want to come out because of that, it would have been pretty disappointing as a fan, but glad that they all made it out.
Yeah.
What did we take away from that? I don't know.
That leaving your kids to go play Survivor is not a bug. It's a feature. That is the number one thing calling me. I had no desire to go play Survivor until I had kids. And they said, wait, what? 39 days out of my house?
Well, and with all of them, almost all of them in this situation now, it really kind of weakens that story, you know, where it's like, oh, I'm doing this for my family. Like everyone, mm-hmm. almost everyone on this cast is a parent and has a family to provide for at this point. So, you know, it's a popular, story at this point with this cast. Yeah. But like when our youngest player is 28, mm-hmm. This, if only all like reality casts were like this, like, you know, the 28 to 48 range would be a lot better. But
yeah,
what can you do?
Main takeaway that involves somebody not being talked about tonight is that the one person that I think was brought up the most times that really needs to look out, which you discussed her already. Kim Spradlin's name was in almost everybody's mouth.
Oh, really?
Broadling.
Everybody yeah. had, because what the interviewer asked a question about who was the most impressive winner or who played the most impressive game, like if it's not you. And of course, the name that pops in everybody's mind, you know, people said Sandra, people said, a couple other names, but Kim, of course, came up a lot.
This is your fault. You have been hyping up Kim for years and ruining this, ruining this for me, the number one Kim stan on earth. If she is out first, I am sending a letter to your PO box. Nice.
It's going to be.
I really didn't think that would be the case. I really thought that her win was far enough away that people would forget how dominating a performance that she had. So to hear
people are just going to meet her and love her. So she's going to stay based on that.
And there was also a lot of talk from the bigger threats that they all are acknowledging the fact that we're big players. We need to stick together. So I do think that there's enough of them that hopefully they will take that and say, all right, I need these people around me. Otherwise, it's going to be game changers where we all go home early and everybody else has a party for the rest of the
night. I know that we're not talking about Tyson tonight, but Tyson's interview was
hysterical.
Yeah. Amazing. Like,
I'm so funny and
him.
I don't know why I forget that from time to time. But once he hits that island, he just has me cracking up.
He's someone that I've actually in the previous weeks sometimes forgot when I was like thinking about people, which is like insane because he's one of my favorites. And I think that says something. Like the fact that there's just so many big names that like you can possibly forget Tyson mm-hmm. is just incredible. And his interview was a must watch. So good.
I want to give credit to the interviewer for ET Canada that it was somebody that I was not familiar with. Mm-hmm. That her name is Sanjita Patel. I'm not 100% sure that I'm pronouncing that correctly, but I do want to give her credit that she did a really great job.
She was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, just great. Like, ET Canada usually sends like Arissa down there, but Arissa was
I think she
a
was
little
pregnant.
Busy at the time. Yeah. So they sent down somebody who you could tell she was a big fan. So she did great.
Yeah. Okay. I also thought one other takeaway that I had was I haven't gotten through all the videos yet, but I was watching Amber do her interview. And I thought on the subject of Sandra, and I think a lot of us assumed, okay, well, Rob and Sandra are going to be sort of like joined at the hip, went through season 39 together. Amber talks about how that is like, Rob and I both don't really know how to approach Sandra, and we'd be kind of happy if she got voted out there. So for all of us who are assuming, okay, well, Rob and Sandra, that is sort of like an unbreakable pair. Don't necessarily assume it, Brent.
Well, I would have definitely assumed that. In fact, I feel like Rob, Boston Rob, like his tentacles get into so many people. It's like the Kevin Bacon game where, you know, how many people are related to Boston Rob on this cast in some way, shape or form. So I would have thought that Amber and Sandra would have worked together. Maybe. Yeah. I'm hoping that maybe once they talk, that can change, because that would, I don't want to see that. I would like to see them work together, but that's my preference.
Okay. It sounds like Rob got scared from spending 39 days. It sounds like
they got sick of each other.
He's like, I can't do this again.
Yeah, like, wait a second. She's sinking. She does not stop. It doesn't stop here.
Yeah. So. I'm thinking it's not really that. It's probably more like Sander was maybe a little bit of a diva and he was like, I'm through with her. So I don't know. I love you, Sander.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about our people that we're going to get into from the two seasons that we're going to talk about. People from season 28 and season 29. And recently I ranked the 10 years of the last decade based on what were the best years of Survivor. And number one on my list was 2014, where we got to see Survivor Cagayan and Survivor San Juan del Sur. And to me, that was when we first started up Patreon. It was my first season as a full-time podcaster. I love everything Survivor from 2014. And so I'm very excited to have this episode where we're talking about all these people that we got to meet, at least on Survivor. In the case of Natalie, we met her earlier on The Amazing Race, but we met her as a Survivor in 2014. Okay. But let's start up. Let's talk about Tony first, and then Tony will give way to Sarah, and then we'll talk about Jeremy and Natalie second. But here comes Tony, and Tony's had such an interesting Survivor journey where he had his season in Survivor Cagayan, season 28, where he was everywhere. And then we had Tony in Game Changers, who was a blip on the radar, but amazingly, it's the same distance away from where we met Tony for one night in Game Changers from now to where Tony played from season 28 to 34, six seasons in between. So every 3 years, we get to see Tony pop up. And so hopefully this time around, it will be for more than just one night. Matt, did you feel like that Tony that you saw today seemed like he might be in a different place than Tony from Game Changers?
100%. The way that he described his game plan going into this season was, he said he doesn't have a plan. He said, I'm not thinking about any strategies. Last time I came in and I said, oh yeah, I'm going underground. I'm going to take the spy shack and make it a spy bunker. And you know, we were all like, oh, that sounds like a lot of fun. He had that strategy with his rocks that he had. One's my wife and one's my kid, and I'm going to give it to people.
Clonies.
Right. And he was going to, those were going to represent his family, and he was going to use that to gain trust. He said, oh, yeah, it sounds like all that's out the window. And he's going in with just a different mindset of, I'm going to see what's out there and just let it play out, because I think, you know, for a lot of these people, expectations are a little bit lower on them this season. I feel like people aren't going in expecting that they're going to walk out the winner. I don't know if that's a hot take, but I think that it's giving them the ability to loosen up a little bit. And Tony is somebody who needs to loosen up.
Haley, were you a fan of Tony 1.0?
I was. It's hard to, even if you may not like him as a dude, it's hard to not have been completely entertained by the game he played in his original season, just because it was so off the wall. And I don't think any of us at that time believed that a game like that could win. We didn't think that going into the finale, we didn't think when he went up against, what's his name?
Woo. Weasel Woo.
Woo. When he went up against Woo, we didn't think Tony was going to win. I remember sitting in, you know, my friend's apartment out east, like on the edge of my seat, because we didn't know who was going to win. And I feel like we haven't had that exciting of a finale in a very long time. And every week we tuned in to see, like, what is Tony going to do next? What is he going to do to get himself out of the trouble he put himself in? And it was just one of the most exciting games to watch. And I am excited to see him back for that reason, because I think when he came back for Game Changers, he came back as Tony the character, and that didn't work for him. So I'm hoping he really reverts to like Tony the dude and just playing, you know, whatever comes to him, not having pre-planned anything, having like ideas going out into the island, just taking things as they are. And I think we could have a lot of fun with Tony again. And I'm hoping that because he didn't do so well in the last season, it could have like a Boston Rob effect. And he'll do super well this season.
Jenny, how much do you feel like that Tony changed the course of Survivor history with his run in season 28?
In a lot of ways, I feel like Tony is instrumental in saving Survivor. I think that Cagayan was such a like important season in history. And the way that we talk about it, the way that it's revered, I think is just, it really reignited, at least I can speak for myself, my excitement in the show. I continued watching through the 20s. And as we got, you know, into the late 20s, it was definitely picking up. But that was like the first season that was just so, so incredible and so long that I just could not get enough of. And obviously this is around the time that, you know, like you were talking about with the podcast, that like starting to consume media and, you know, be more engaged on Twitter and stuff like that. So I really just feel like, you know, and how Tony was present on social media during that season, like, I just feel like that was like a turning point in how we consume Survivor. And I just think that he's such an important part of Survivor history. And I'm so, so excited that we get him back on our TVs. And regardless of how his run is going to be, you know, be mad at Edge of Extinction returning, but at least that ensures there's no way Tony's going home. Even if he goes to Edge of Extinction, we're going to get multiple episodes of Tony Vlachos, and that is a gift that we've all earned after the last year of Survivor. So I'm thrilled.
Okay.
And he seems refreshed. I like, you know, Matt kind of touched on it already. He's recognized where he went wrong with his approach in Game Changers. And I think that, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about Tony as someone who has no shot in, you know, the season because of just, you know, so how much of an erratic player he is and just the kind of target that he makes on, you know, and that he's playing with these other, you know, very adept players. But I think that where this differs from Game Changers is like he was one of three winners in Game Changers, and a very, very, you know, high profile winner at that. This is a different playing field. And I do think that this is a theme that came up in some of the interviews, that there are going to be people that see themselves as the big fish that band together to protect each other and kind of go after some of, you know, the lesser known threats that they feel like might need to prove something. So I actually don't feel terrible about Tony's chances in this season, and seeing him be like verbalize how he's feeling about the game really made me feel a lot better about it today too.
Yeah, honestly, that makes me feel so much better to hear somebody else say that, because tales of Tony's incompetence have been greatly exaggerated across the RHAP universe. I listened to the Survivor 40 preseason draft that Mike Bloom and Ali Lasher and Akiva and Liana Boris did, and they were like making a joke of Tony. Like, not only did he go 20 in that out of 20 people in that draft, but then they gave Liana the option to, who Liana had the 20th draft selection, they gave her the option to not even select Tony, to select people who may have been cast on the show who were not even there. So
I
understand. Exactly. Put some respect on his name. The thing that people don't understand about Tony is that Tony in Game Changers, he forgot the girl that brought him to the dance, okay? Because he was an absolute buffoon in Game Changers. And that is not how he played on his original season. People remember the kooky stuff and the like they remember in the llama talking and all that.
You mean this?
Okay. Yes.
I needed this. Ooh.
This is Tony talking about Brent praising him. Yes.
Yeah, no, but seriously, he had a lot of great tools that he used during Cagayan, because he was sympathetic. He was empathetic. He was heartfelt when he needed to be. He was serious when he needed to be. And most of all, for people who think that he was a complete joke, you just need to be dissuaded from that. You need to look at the final tribal council performance in Cagayan, where he really had to get serious for a second when Trish came to him and said, look, you swore on your father's grave to me, and I need to know, was it worth it to you for $1 million to defile the memory of your father? And he starts to give a bunch of excuses, and she's like, no, I want the truth. And he's like, and she's like, was it worth it for $1 million to soil your father's memory? Answer, yes or no. And he looks at her without a beat and goes, yes. And I, like, to me, I'm like, oh my God, like, write him the check right now. So if he can just bottle a little bit of that on this season with all of these crazy egos around him, I really feel like he's got a shot to win this thing.
Yeah, it's so interesting that we've had the two Tonys, not the clones, but we've had the Tony who is literally and figuratively unstoppable, where he's got a bag of tricks, and in that bag of tricks is an idol where you can't even vote him out. And then, Haley, we saw the very mortal Tony, where he gets struck down on the very first night of the show. He ends up being the second boot. He's covering, he's buried himself. Everybody is seeing through what
the spy grave.
What he's up to, that he flew too close to the sun, came all the way back down to Earth. But now we have a chance to view this third iteration of Tony. And do you think that he is going to be seen as, okay, this is the unstoppable force? Or is he, as they mention on the draft podcast, is this the clown? Is this the person who, you don't take Tony seriously?
I just worry that people will find him unpredictable, and unpredictability is a really scary thing in the game of Survivor. And so why play with fire? And, so I could see Tony going out for that reason pretty early. But I'm hoping he humbled himself from his last play and can kind of go back to basics.
Jenny, can Tony chill out? Can Tony not be crazy Tony?
I mean, he seemed chilled out in his interview, the ET Canada
Somebody
interview.
Needs to go back and watch the Game Changers preseason interview. I'm so relaxed now.
Well, he seemed like he was ready to go in that interview. He definitely did seem, more relaxed, and some of the answers he gave like really impressed me, and just the way that he talked about, you know, what he learned from his second time out and how he needs to change his game plan, and just the way that he talked about his strategy and what to change, that was all really great. But I also know that Tony is the kind of like Tony can't not be Tony. Mm-hmm. And he was even talking about his family. He was like, oh, ask me in a couple, he's like, I'm okay right now, but like, you know, ask me the same, because I'm getting ready for the game, like ask me again in a few days and I might be like, you know, pent up. And I think that that goes for more than just talking about his family. I think that it's one of those things where it's easy to say in the pregame when, you know, things haven't gotten real yet, that you're going to play a certain way. And I will always have concerns about Tony not being able to not be extra. But he's saying all the right things, and I can see a lot of scenarios where things don't go as poorly for him as you would think they would. So I'm just gonna remain hopeful. I'm holding on to, and like, this will be a theme of how I talk about all four of the people we're discussing tonight, that I see a scenario where some of these big names, are really, you know, using each other as meat shields. Yes. And I think that even though it was six seasons ago, Game Changers is still going to be present in everyone's minds. And they're going to say, remember that roster? And, you know, well, maybe a little shade on, you know, Brad and Troyzan and Sarah as the final three, but people were scratching their heads being like, how did this happen? And I think that that is something that's going to be, you know, still present in the minds of the season 40, winners, that they're not going to want to get bested by someone that they feel like played a lesser game. And so I really think that we could see someone like Tony thriving here.
Just really quickly, and I see this in the comments section too, of the chat, is like, people are like, I'm really worried that Tony can't not be Tony. And I heard Mike Bloom say that on the preseason podcast. He's like, that's just him. That's in his blood. And I'm like, did y'all forget that he's a cop? Like, did y'all forget that that was his job when he was on Kageyama, with that, even though he was acting crazy?
He's a construction worker, bro.
Well, of course. But my point being that he, like, this is not him in real life. Like, he can actually be serious. And for, like, the first, 50% of that game, I feel like he really was serious and taken seriously by his tribe, to the point where they looked at him like a leader. They looked at him like someone who we can depend on and trust. Now, I feel like he has it within him to act like that, to act more like that. Like, here's the thing. Do the people on the island know what they think is the real Tony? Do they perceive that? Certainly. But I feel like he can change their mind and say, look, I'm an older guy now. You know, I've lost a step or two and I'm chill now. It's cool. And they've got so many other threats around them. Are they really going to worry about Tony? I think not.
I do think that Tony, I could see him coming out of there like, oh, you know, I lost a step. Did you see Game Changers? I suck now. You know, I'm not as good as you. I'm not as good as these young guys. So I definitely see Tony really heavily pouring on the I suck now card and trying to convince people. But Matt, when we talk about this idea of meat shields, is that counterintuitive that the more that Tony sort of like walks around with his like shoulder slumped and like, oh, I suck now. I'm not as good as I used to be. I'm not like any of these young guys. So is it possible that is that the opposite way of that Tony should be going? If people like we saw Jeremy in his interviews talking about how, hey, I got to keep Tony around. I need guys like that out in front of me.
So I don't want to scare you because I know that you're a big Tony guy, but I kind of feel like if Tony is used in that way as a meat shield for some of the other bigger players, I feel like there's big potential there that could turn into him ending up as a goat that people carry to the end. And I know that might sound crazy at first, but there was a lot of Tony comparisons when he first played to this guy's somewhat like Russell. You know, there was it obviously like as his game played out, that kind of disappeared a little bit, that you saw the separation between the two of them. But if there is that kind of like negative vibe towards Tony, you don't feel great about him. You feel a little bit icky after you're done playing a season with him. Once you get towards like the halfway point in the game, you're not worried about Tony and immunity challenge. Like a lot of these are all balance and you know, holding the thing above your head. Is Tony beating you in that? Probably not. So at a certain point, I might be looking at someone like Tony, like I wouldn't mind sitting next to him at the end because I feel like I'm more likable than him and I could get the votes. There's not a lot
Tony
of goats.
Tony only has
season.
One challenge win. He won the cover yourself in mud reward and won a slice of pizza or a couple slices of pizza that he got to eat with Trish. That is the only challenge win.
He talked about wanting. In his interview, he talks about wanting to finally get an individual immunity win. So, yeah. I mean, it's not something we've seen yet.
So if I'm Kim, if I'm Parvati, if I'm any of these like likable people and I'm at the final nine with Tony, why do I want to get rid of him at this point?
Yeah. Well, where do I sign on the dotted line for Tony in the final three? How do I do that?
But then you also like I can see the argument when it's like Tony's in the final three and it's like it's freaking Tony. Like you let Tony get to the final.
That's
three.
What I was going
to
say. Like when Rob was asking Matt about like, you know, if Tony acts a certain way, is that the opposite of the way he needs to act? I'm like, it's still Tony freaking Blockos. Like, I mean, I feel like he's one of the top five people in this cast who you really know, like first name, like, you know who he is. He commands respect. Even if you don't respect him on the island, like the idea in the game he played in Cagayan, it commands respect to a certain extent, or at least a little bit of fear in some of these people, a fear of the unknown. So I have to imagine that there's no way he's going to end up as a goat, Matt.
Haley, what do you make of this? Which way do you see this ending up going for Tony?
You know, as a stereotypical Libra, I can see it going both ways. Absolutely.
Same.
Yes. Do you have the astrological readings for all the people that we're going to talk about tonight? We'll get that at the end for each person.
Excellent. Okay. I could... Oh gosh, I have to make a decision. You're gonna force me to do it. I think he'll be out pre-merge. Mm-hmm. But God, it would be fun to see him last longer than that.
Yeah. And are they going to find out about Edge of Extinction early on? Because that could influence this. I don't want to live with Tony on the Edge of Extinction.
Can you imagine?
My understanding was
that's not what I want.
I was told that I was reading today that a few of them talked about it in their interviews and that, like, I think they told them this beforehand.
They speculated. They didn't know.
I thought Probst said in his interview with Dalton, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that they wanted to guarantee the winners a chance, like an honest chance at the game.
Yeah.
And so they went with Edge of Extinction. I took that to mean that everybody knew about it.
So I don't know if they're going to if they know about it yet in the preseason, but the way that it seems like it's structured where you have fire tokens and you're exchanging fire tokens with people on the Edge of Extinction.
Fire sign tokens?
Yeah. I think that if they do not know yet. I think they will know almost immediately as soon as the first person is voted out, and there's sort of like this opportunity to say this trading between the people on the edge of extinction and the people that are still in the game.
Okay.
Yep.
So all right. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. Let's talk about some friends for Tony that might be out there. Of course, that's somebody who we're going to talk about in a greater detail, who this is the relationship to watch. Sarah Lucina is there. And so, Jenny, this is very interesting, I think, that we're talking about, like, can Tony stay under control? That can Tony not fly off the handle? That having Sarah out there, this does feel like that, okay, that he has now a partner on the beat to say, like, Tony, you gotta calm down, you're getting out of control, you're getting too crazy.
Well, I mean, I've seen lots of people ask, like, who's going to be Tony's Trish, and that, you know, Trish playing such a huge part in Tony's stellar game in Cagayan. And I think that this is what we've been waiting for, is finally seeing Tony and Sarah actually work together and have it work. Mm-hmm. And I think that Cops Are Us, like, you know, version, I guess this is 2.0 since they didn't really get to connect in Game Changers. But I think that this is the perfect timing, because Tony's calmed down, he's humbled himself, and Sarah's gotten her win. And so there's, you know, she doesn't have a chip on her shoulder anymore, because she got to play the game that she knew she was capable of in Game Changers, got her win. And the way that Sarah talks about Tony post all of this is, she's got a lot of love for Tony. And I think that that love goes right back to Sarah. And Sarah, I think that they know that they're not, I don't think either of them are super socially connected in the community. I don't think that either of them are, you know, big event people. I think that they kind of, you know, play Survivor and then they get back to their normal lives. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they are smart enough to recognize that, you know, they need each other in this game. So and Sarah is very level-headed, very calm. And, you know, we might see Sarah finally be, Trish 2.0 for Tony and be the grounding presence for his crazy. And I'd love to see it. Like, I think it would be really interesting to see them finally, the buddy cop storyline that we've really wanted, or some of us have wanted. I'm excited for it.
Haley, but do you feel like that while Sarah could be a calming presence for Tony, is that actually a bigger target? Like, if Sarah and Tony are not working together, that Tony might be better off. But the fact that if people start seeing the two of them together, is that a bigger potential problem for one or both of them?
Yes, probably. But, like, are we sure that Sarah wants to be partnered up with Tony again? Like, I feel like she's been burned by him before.
Yeah. We'll get to Sarah and talk about a Game Changer. But that is a great point, that Sarah is, you know, one who does not ever seem to mind losing an ally here or there, that try to, you know, keep her threat level lower. Brent, could you see Sarah throwing Tony under the bus?
Oh, yeah, I can see Sarah throwing Tony under the bus. I can see a variety of different people throwing Tony under the bus, including some of the more alpha guys. I mean, I know what Jeremy said in his ET Canada interview, Matt, but I still feel like that of the people there who might be most irritated or threatened by Tony, it would be some of the more alpha guys. If you look back at Cagayan and where Tony really thrived, it was surrounding himself with women and young guys. So I feel like if Tony can cobble together people like that, he might have more of a chance. But like some of these alpha guys, or even some of these
LJ.
That's true. Yeah, he didn't like LJ and he didn't like Cliff. So he got rid of the two older guys. I mean, to me, of those people on Cagayan, I felt like LJ was more of an elder statesman compared to, like, you know, Spencer and Wu. So take it for what you will.
Okay, Matt, who else are allies for Tony that are in this game potentially?
Your guess is as good as mine. There's no other natural allies for him. There's nobody else that I think is, this is a clear person that he should work with, that he can work with. But I think, like we've been saying, I guess he is somebody that is the perfect person for anybody else that needs that extra person to go pick up. But I don't see any other, like, natural fits.
Well, let me throw out, how about Sandra? Now, they did not get along in Game Changers, but they both went on that pre-jury trip together. And I do feel like that's the kind of thing where, you know, I always think about this with Suri and Tom Westman, where they both went after each other in Heroes versus Villains. And then the two of them at Ponderosa sat there and said, we should have worked together. What are we? This was crazy. Why were you coming after me and me coming after you? That we could have done something. And they spent a lot of time together outside of the game. And I really think that they seemed like they had a mutual respect for each other. Jenny, is that possible? Could we see Tony working with Sandra?
I thought about it because for the reasons that you've mentioned, but I think that there's just a very big difference in the example that you gave and Tony and Sandra. Like, I just think that there's so much ego there and that they're both the kind of person where it's like, if I couldn't work with you before, it's not going to happen now.
He calls her the queen now.
I think that he feels that way. Absolutely. But that
Sandra
doesn't.
Sandra is the queen.
Does he want to lose to Sandra? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is that what he really wants? And I almost think that Tony would be more interested in it than Sandra.
Oh, definitely
So I could see Tony being okay with it, but I could also see Sandra just being like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah, I in the scenario or the analogy that you proposed, Rob, like it was Suri and Tom, both who finished like third and fourth on, or fourth and fifth on their seasons in Heroes versus Villains. You know, with the Game Changers, Tony went out like a second and Sandra only went out because she got swap screwed. Yeah. So
I really
I feel like Sandra's like, I didn't do nothing wrong. I got rid of him when I was supposed to, and I just got a bad swap. Mm-hmm. What do you want?
You could also say that, like, you know, those two needing to work, like looking back and being like, we should have worked together, is a totally different point in Game Changers than this season, where they were two of the only three winners playing in Game Changers. It's a lot easier to say, like, we were going to be targets. We should have been keeping each other around as long as possible. When you're playing a season with all winners and there's some really heavy hitters, I just don't think that that argument really applies the same way that it would with Game Changers. And I just cannot, I cannot see. I really loved what Shannon said the other night about, you know, Sandra lining up people. If she can't win, she would rather have these sorts of people be successful in the game. I just never see Tony being one of those people. So I think as much as Tony might be open to it, I just don't see it being a mutually felt relationship.
Okay. Haley, do you see any people on the board that are major ops for Tony that are going to be coming in saying, hey, got to get Tony out first, second, as soon as possible?
Yeah, I'd say there's probably a couple, starting with Amber, Danny, Denise, Kim, Michelle, Natalie, Parvati, Sandra, Sarah, Sophie, Adam, Ben, Ethan, Jeremy, Nick, Rob, Tony. Tony's trying to get himself out. Tyson, Wendell, and Yule.
Wow.
Coming in hot.
Well, you would have fit in really well on that Survivor 40 preseason draft podcast, Haley.
No, it's just a joke. Some true adversaries, I think. I think Rob doesn't like that type of guy who's unpredictable. I could see Yule going either way with him.
Yeah, I could see Boston Rob not loving Tony. I definitely could see that.
I can see Tyson loving Tony as like a comedic character in front of him, like as entertainment on the island, but I don't think he ever wants to work with him. Ethan, I just don't like. Ethan's a nice guy, but I don't think they're going to mesh. Like, it's just a lot of, you know, looking through this. Natalie and Tony, like, I don't know if those two strong personalities are going to go well together.
I think she likes Natalie. I don't know if they've spent any time in real life, but when it was rumored that Natalie was going to be on Game Changers, that I feel like that she talked about that. I remember in doing, because they, again, these are people that played back to back, and that she gave Tony a lot of credit, that she had seen Tony's season right before they played in San Juan del Sur.
But there's a difference between giving somebody credit and like playing the game with them, especially when Natalie wants to be Queen Bee.
Yeah, they're both from like blue collar people from Jersey. Like they have
half
some
this
connections.
Cast is from Jersey.
Yeah, there's a lot of Northeast.
That's good. That's good.
The
Survivor New Jersey.
That was one thing I took away from. I listened to Natalie's interview with you during Game Changers, and she talked about how she was almost on the season and how she would have played. And we'll talk about this more, but she did know that I would have been working with Tony and Sandra, like bringing together the big targets and you know, going after the smaller people. But again, same point I just made. That is a totally different story in Game Changers when those three are, you know, in her mind. She didn't mention JT at all.
I still feel like, though,
those are the winners.
I take your point, Jenny, but I still feel like that there's enough chafe in this cast that even though they are winners, there's plenty of people here who we don't really care a lot about and nobody really cares a lot about. But Tony is somebody you care about and Sandra is somebody you care about. And I feel like they should know that they should work together.
I agree.
Do they know they can work together? But sure. But can they work together? Can they just push everything aside once they're on the island, or will they get at each other's throats?
I feel like it's more on Tony. If Tony comes with olive branch, then
If he can tone it down,
annoyed by him, like Sandra can flip like that.
Yeah,
I'd
be scared of Sandra if I were Tony.
Let's give a ballpark of where we think Tony's going. Brent, you seem like you're the highest on Tony on the panel, at least from Kagyan. Feel like that Tony has a shot.
He makes the merge. I feel like he has a shot, and I feel like he clearly makes the merge. My opinion on Tony.
Yes, and actually, now Matt, you almost sound like that. Maybe he could go far, but not win.
I don't think Tony can win again. I think we call his win like he was the unicorn, and I feel like that's for a reason. I don't think it can happen again, but I do think he can stick around longer this time than he did last time, and definitely hoping for that. But
that isn't hard.
I just don't think he can win again. I don't.
Okay, Haley, it sounds like you think he's out very early.
I think so. I would love to be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Haley, I feel like you're forgetting like what Shean said in All Stars about Richard Hatch. Like, no one wants to see the king dead. Like, that would be, that's no fun.
Yeah,
like,
there's a lot of kings and there's a lot of queens. Yeah, it's not like All Stars where there's a few of them. Like, everyone here is like,
I still feel like Tony commands that respect with them. Like, even like I said, it may not be a respect like the way we think of it, but at least like a certain level of fear. Like, you know, I want to give him his due. But we'll see. Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part.
In terms of giving him his due, I do think that when we look at sort of like we'll talk about on Monday night, you know, the people that are like the people that played after Tony and what they think of him. I do think, again, like when we talk about like the Adams and Knicks and maybe even like Wendell, do they have like a reverence for Tony? Would they be not so quick to vote Tony out? Like, I gotta see what this guy is going to do next. I want to keep him around.
I can just see Adam, like, you know, I feel like Adam is really the kind of person that, you know, he's a fanboy of the game, even though he's won, you know, he has just as much right to be there as anyone else. I still think that there's, you know, something about him where he's going to be like, yo, I'm playing with freaking Tony Vlachos. Like, this is incredible.
Right.
And I think that it's, you know, say what you will about Tony, whether he's your favorite person or not, or, you know, his gameplay was your favorite. He is a character, and he is, you know, I just think that there will be people that get wrapped up in just the presence of him. And I can see someone like an Adam possibly wanting to work with him, just because it's like, I've always wanted to like work with this person, and, you know, I'll figure out how I beat him later, but for now I want this guy in my corner. And so I definitely think that he could have more friends than people are thinking that he would going in.
Wendell, Nick, Ben, those are, I feel like, ideal allies for Tony at this point, and he just needs to pray that a couple of them are on his tribe.
So I really came into this feeling like where I was, where Haley was, like, Tony's probably the first one out, at least as the edge of extinction. But I have to say, I'm starting to warm to Tony. I don't think he can win. I don't think people are going to let him get that far, but I do feel like that people will say, like, okay, well, as long as Tony is around, I'm not going to be in trouble. But then eventually, you know, when he shows up with an idol, or he's out idol hunting eventually, or he's gone for, like, where's Tony? Is he hiding in the bushes again? I think eventually that he can't not be Tony, and I think that's going to eventually be too big of a threat, and they're going to send him out of the game. But I do think he'll be around for a while.
He's impossible to forget about. You just, there will never be a point where you forget that Tony's there like you will with maybe a bunch of the others.
Which so I feel like works in favor of other people who have really big egos and are scared to death that they're going to be betrayed by somebody. Keeping somebody around like Tony is ideal for them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when Tony went to go play in Survivor Game Changers, the people on Game Changers, they had not seen Millennials versus Gen X. So I don't know. They had not seen that much of it where Adam, you know, felt a part of Adam's game was I'm going to keep the threats out in front of me. Jeremy played that way in Cambodia, but I don't know how much that was really talked about yet in terms of what his strategy was. And I do think that as the 30s has gone along, more and more people have played with this idea of I need to keep the threats out in front. And now maybe that strategy has caught up to a point where Tony can actually benefit from this idea of being that person who other players put out in front of them so that they end up being able to hide behind some of these bigger targets in the game. So we'll see if Tony can benefit from that. But
One last thing real quick. One of the other things that he said in his interview was that he isn't all about like the whole like basically calling out the people who go on Survivor these days and try to be like influencers or kind of
talking
just,
about.
I don't know, but it felt pretty targeted at the newer players, like the people who are just all over social media. I don't know. Michelle, Wendell, like people who are popping up all over the place kind of thing. So I don't know if he's going to be working as closely with the new players. I feel like he might just gravitate towards the old school.
You know, we're contestants. We're not celebrities. So it's like, Price is Right.
And, but I also think, sorry, go on, Ron.
No, and Sanjita, had said to him like, well, who are you talking about? He's like, go on YouTube. Go on YouTube.
Go on YouTube.
Who's on YouTube?
So he's got his eye on people that he's not loving.
I think he's talking about you.
I think he thinks you're on the cast, Rob. That's what that's what
Rock and Rob.
Yeah. I didn't think he was necessarily saying about people that are on the cast. I thought he was just saying Survivors in general.
Yeah, he might not have even been referring to winners.
Maybe. I felt like he was maybe talking a little bit about people who just pop up at all these events and think that they're celebrities because they, you know, go everywhere and people want to take pictures with them kind of thing.
Oh, he's talking about Adam and Sandra and Rob.
Also said that one of his pet peeves was know-it-alls. And now I've always been nothing but love for Tony. I have to think he was talking about Steven, right?
There was shaded fishbag.
Nick said that too. And Nick was a patron.
Nick mentioned know-it-alls. So there was a few mentions.
Me know it all. So like they are annoying, right?
You might need to rebrand, Rob. This is getting a little too murky.
All right. But Jenny, before we can move on from Tony, will you promise that you would give us the astrological sign for Tony? How is it looking for Tony?
Okay, well, I'm not going to get into it, and I'm going to piss off a ton of people because I know that some people don't like astrology. Tony, so it's more complicated than just your sun sign. Tony is a Virgo. Virgos are very detail oriented. They're kind of seen as like the anal sign.
Whoa!
They're organized. They have really keen eye. They're kind of like the mom or the dad sign. Like they're in charge. I think that him as a police officer as a Virgo makes a lot of sense. The way that he was able to find idols, that makes a lot of sense as a Virgo. They're very type A and like to do things their way. They're the people that are standing in the corner watching you do something and being like, you're doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's what Tony, but Tony's definitely got some other wild stuff happening in his chart for sure.
Sounds
but
like
he,
it.
Tony is, I believe his birthday might be September 10th or something around then. He's a Virgo.
Hey, that's Nicole's birthday.
I was going to say, yeah, he's right around Nicole.
They're very similar. That's why
Nicole is definitely a Virgo.
Okay. All right. Well, let's take a quick break from talking about meat shields to talking about meat. And that's because this podcast is sponsored by our friends over at ButcherBox. ButcherBox is a great thing for people, because if you want to spend less time and money at the grocery store and eat better, you can now with ButcherBox. You don't need no fire tokens to get high quality meats sent to your house. ButcherBox is the meat delivery subscription that is going to give you more time for what matters most. Each month, they're going to send you a box of the highest quality meat for a better price than at the grocery store, which is going to give you more time to spend cooking and sharing delicious meals with your family and friends. Each month, ButcherBox is going to ship you you a curated selection of high quality meat right to your home. It's all free of antibiotics and added hormones. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individual meals. That's more than if you were going to have a meal for every survivor this season. Packed fresh and shipped frozen, vacuum sealed, so it stays that way. You can customize your box or go with one of theirs. It's exactly what you want. We got to try this out and they sent us a whole big crate of stuff over to the house. You throw it right in the freezer. It's ready to go when you need it. ButcherBox is the most affordable and convenient way to get healthy, humanely raised meat. With ButcherBox, you get the highest quality meat around for just $6 a meal, and they have free shipping in the United States, except for to Alaska and Hawaii. Right now, you can get 2 pounds of salmon absolutely free. That's like having Rupert right there in your backyard, plus $20 off your first box. Just go to butcherbox.com/RHAP. Use promo code RHAP at checkout. That's butcherbox.com/RHAP, or use promo code RHAP at checkout. Great deal with ButcherBox. Okay, let's talk about Tony's partner in crime, maybe. Let's talk about a little more about Sarah. Brent, she came off of winning in Game Changers. And Sarah is such an interesting person to talk about, I think, because she came into Game Changers super low profile. No, then she was one of the people that's like, and who else is? Sarah is on the cast. OK, nobody was concerned about her. She was able to stay under the radar, made big moves left and right, switching back and forth. Voting out her allies, taking the legacy advantage from Sierra Dawn Thomas, voting out all these different people that she worked with. She gives her wedding ring to she took Brad Culpepper's wedding ring.
Yeah, she gave her bracelet. It was like a bicycle spoke bracelet.
She didn't care about it. And then here she is. She wins. Brent, are people going to lose track of Sarah Lucina again, or is her profile too big after coming off of Game Changers?
No, her profile is definitely not too big, not with the caliber of players that we have on this season. There's just no way it can be. I think that it's far more likely that they forget about her. And yes, she played an amazing game on Game Changers, but a lot of people don't really like that season. And it's sort of like, yeah, she won, but she was up there against Troyzan and Culpepper. So I really don't think they're going to give her a lot of credit, even though they probably should. And I honestly feel like her fate in this game is polar opposites. It's either she's going to be one of the first boots because she doesn't really have any ties with anybody and people see her as expendable and not to worry about. Plus, they think it'll make the fans happy, which I actually do think is a little part of some of their thinking. Or she will slide through to the merge and make her way to the end. I actually don't think she can win again, mainly because I feel like she's somewhat unlikable to some of the people in this cast. But we'll see. But nevertheless, I still feel like that her game is it's a high risk, high reward at this point. That's how I feel with Sarah.
Okay, Haley, what do you make of Sarah and her threat level coming in?
I feel like her threat level is higher than her perceived threat level. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone's going to be thinking of her going into the game. I don't think anyone's going to be thinking about her until after the merge. She's going to put her head down. She's going to work at camp. She's going to do okay in challenges. And she's going to be like not so great socially that she scares people, but not mm-hmm. bad socially. Like, I think people forget that people like Sarah in Game Changers. That's why she got so far. I remember
I think that's a good point. If we could just dive into that a little bit more, because that Sarah had done, I know that Brent made the point that they're saying that people don't like Sarah, but I don't think that's the case, that she does not come across on TV as somebody that you think of like when you watch Kim on TV, like Kim seems very likable and you understand. And then everybody else that's around her also likes her. But with Sarah, that everybody that played with her in Game Changers, and I get to talk to all these people when they come off the game, they all talked about how like, oh, I thought Sarah was my best friend and Sarah and I was really close and everybody had these great relationships with Sarah. There's almost nobody that came off the show and was like, oh, I hated Sarah the whole time. Sarah was the worst. But then it doesn't necessarily translate to the TV show, Haley.
I completely agree. Like, I don't think anyone's going to consider her an exciting character, especially when Tony is on screen next to her. But any of the people she burned in Game Changers, they're not here to tell the other people that they got burnt. I think Tony burned Sarah before she could burn him. And so he's not super afraid of her or anything. I don't think anyone's going to be afraid of her. I think there are a lot of bigger targets on the board that are going to go before you, they even think of her. And I could absolutely see her ending up in the final three again and people going like, darn, I guess we should have gotten her out, but like, happen? We forgot. Yeah.
Jenny, do you have thoughts on Sarah 3.0?
She played an incredibly impressive game in Game Changers. And I do think that, you know, people just really don't like that season. And that has an impact on how her win is viewed, because I think people, like, in a vacuum, I think it's just, she just played such an impressive game and she is a very worthy winner. And so I think that the fact that is not a well-regarded season in general helps downplay her threat, even though her actual game was very impressive. The problem is there are various people in this cast that I feel like have something to them and the way that they play the game that they put them in any season in with any people around them, and they can do well playing that same sort of style of game. Sarah's second game was so reliant on how she was perceived going into that mm-hmm. second game, and people not really getting to see what she was capable of in Cagayan and being bested by Tony. And so much of her game relied upon everyone feeling like they were her number one. And I think that once you see someone play that way, the jig's kind of up. And I just think that, like, she's not playing with any chumps. Like, these are all winners. They obviously have done their homework, and I think that no one is going to get fooled by thinking, oh, I'm like, you know, Sarah and I are talking about this, and like, I really feel like she's like my best friend out here, because that's exactly how she got the win in Game Changers. So I do worry that this is the kind of, she can't replicate that same game. So she's going to have to do something different if she wants to go far. And I, as much as I do feel like she has excellent game potential in her, I just don't know that she can pull it off again, and that she might be one of these people that gets picked off early.
Yeah. Matt,
go ahead.
I was going to just mention that, Matt, that it's interesting about Sarah being seen as somebody who's a backstabber, because that's what she had to do so much in Game Changers to be able to win. And it was a incredible win that she had. But there were so many people that were close to her, you know, especially the one that stands out, I think, the most is the Sierra Dawn Thomas with the legacy advantage of, OK, I'm going to she told me she would give me the legacy advantage, so now I have to get her voted out. So many of these winners didn't have to backstab to get the win. That so many of the winners were able to sort of get to the finals and be able to have done it where it wasn't like that they took out all these other people that were their friends along the way. That, do you think that reputation is something that you could shake in a season like this?
I don't see Sarah playing this season anything like she played the last one. I think the version of Sarah from Cagayan is way more likely to come out here, where she kind of maybe feels like she has a grasp on the game and it kind of completely falls apart once she finds her. Because I do see her as somebody who could go either way. I think she could go with the new players, or she could try to go with the old players, and she might find herself in that middle position again, where she thinks that she is the swing vote, ends up not being the swing vote. There was a little bit of talk about how I know Parvati definitely mentioned it, but if there are any of these other winners out there who haven't been paying full attention to the most recent seasons, but maybe you're catching up a little bit or just refreshing themselves on some of the recent stuff, especially because they want to see, you know, some of the recent twists and whatnot, and they see Sarah, they're going in with this is one of the best players of this new crop of players. You know, she dominated her season, super impressive. I do think that she could very easily stand out amongst that group. And I also have to agree, I don't remember who specifically might have said it, but I do not find Sarah very likable. I think she, in her pregame interview, the one that we just, you know, got today from ET Canada, there were some people I saw after Tommy's recent interview with you talking about Tommy's really high on his game, huh? He really liked what he did out there. Sarah, check out her interview. She was
very humbled like Tony.
She was very high on the game that she played. I was one of the best winners. I played a masterful game. And if she brings that energy with her to the island, it's going to be off-putting to everybody else, on top of the fact that she's just not somebody that is your top pick to work with. So there's signs all over the place that I feel like there are going to be people like Parvati or like some of the old school players who are like, you know what? There's nothing that's going to happen here with me and Sarah. She's a good person to get out.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that actually too. Something, you know, I keep it real with you guys, and so like something to think about that people on the island might be thinking about as well is that Sarah Lucina is a somewhat vocal supporter of the President of the United States, and I know that there are people on the island who care about that sort of thing, and I'm not projecting my thoughts onto the island about what I want to happen, but I certainly think it's not outside the realm of possibility that they will look at her and go, you know what, let's just get rid of her first, because yeah, who cares?
I understand that, you know, in terms of like the like people's politics, that yeah, first off, one, I think it's more likely to like the people that share her political views would be more likely to work with her. But in terms
there
of
are, there are that as well,
in terms of voting somebody out because of that, that I people are going to do what's best for them. I don't think that people are going to, you know, I'm going to vote out this person because
I agree. The chat's already coming for me. They're like, no politics, Brent. I'm not trying to bring politics into it. I'm just keeping it real with you guys that it. I feel like we're in a really polarizing environment right now, and there may be people on the island with an axe to grind. That's what I'm saying, and I'm giving you the tea.
Yeah,
I said she's unlikable. There's a lot of reasons why. But-
Yeah. You know, that if you go back to her last, I mean, she won a season during the Trump presidency. So
yeah.
it didn't seem to hold her back last time.
I feel like that was a different Sarah then. And they didn't really know much about her, but we'll see.
I don't know. I don't think anybody's politics are going to have a bearing. I would be
Let's
very
hope
surprised.
Not.
I'd be very surprised if any of the players talk a lot about politics on the island, because it seems like a good way to, you know, lose half your allies at any given point.
Very true.
Yeah.
I think one thing about Sarah is that there's something about like her tone of voice where it's like she's so monotone that I think that actually makes her sound less likable. I know, sorry, monotone people, but like there's something about her tone of voice that like I find that it just makes her sound dull and like maybe less interested in what you're saying. But it seems that her one-on-one relationships mm-hmm. that like she made is where she really like flourishes. So I feel like she doesn't pop out in group settings. Like I just feel like she's like, but she's very, there's something about how she connects one-on-one with people, and that's where she did work in Game Changers.
Right.
But I just think that it, you know, it's not an underreported story that is how she got where she did in Game Changers. And the fact that people are already pulling that out, the fact that Parvati is, you know, acknowledging that she's a dangerous person. I agree with Matt that I do see her as someone, because I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, that she's not one of these people that I see as really well connected in the community. She played with Tony, but you know, yes, she played with Sandra. But I don't see her coming into this season with a lot of connections. And I just don't think that she's going to be able to work her charms in the same way that she did in Game Changers, and that she will, you know, she does have, it is very likely that she's seen as someone who's expendable, especially if someone's like, I want to weaken Tony, but I want him around because he is a lightning rod. And, you know, as long as Tony is around, that's attention mm-hmm. taken away from me. But, you know, he has Sarah, and as long as he has Sarah, that's someone that sneaks along, and I want to get rid of that person. And I could definitely see a fate like that for Sarah.
Yeah, Haley, it was such a big part of her narrative where that it wasn't just that she won, but it was like she was, and everybody knows it by heart. Like she was the police officer. She played like a police officer the first time, but she played like a criminal the second time. And I just think that when you have that baked in narrative, it's really hard to shake that.
Sure, but I think a lot of these people have have baked in narratives that are going to follow them along.
But some of the narratives are like, oh, they're so nice, or they're so charismatic.
People are still saying that Parvati is going to flirt, and she's been married, she has a child, and Natalie Anderson's out here like, well, you know how Parvati plays the game. She's going to flirt with all the guys out here.
Yeah. She's going to flirt with Jeff and get some extra fire tokens, obviously.
Like, come on, keep up a little bit, guys.
It's tough. Some of the other things I'll say in Sarah's favor, though, is that she is a great athlete. And if you're looking for somebody to, you know, pin the blame on of that you lose a challenge early on, Brent, she's not going to be voted out for not being able to help the tribe in the challenges.
Certainly true. And I think that she's definitely a possibility for an early boot, but not for the reasons that you might think. I just think that she could be unlikable or as seen as expendable by people. As Jenny noted, she doesn't have a lot of connections with the people who are currently playing the game this season. So I feel like there's a real chance that they might look around and go, who's here that nobody cares about? Okay, Sarah.
Yeah. I just want to push back just a little bit more on the Sarah is unlikable, because I just think that she's just doesn't pop on television. But I just feel like that the coming out of Game Changers, that everybody there felt like that she was likable. And I feel like that the people that are out there with her are going to really feel that way about her again. As Jenny was saying, I think she's very good establishing these one-on-one connections. And there's so many parents out there. She has a young kid also. So I think that she's going to have no problem getting along with people. But I think that the threat level of that previous game, I think, is going to loom so large in people's minds. I want to go back to talking about Tony and Sarah. And in my head, if they're together, that I'm thinking like, all right, well, Tony is probably going to get voted out if they're going to split up Tony and Sarah. But Matt, is it possible? Do I have this backwards? Is it possible that, hey, we got to break up Tony and Sarah and Sarah is the one that gets voted out?
Yeah, definitely possible, because there's so many people that want to keep Tony around, you know, possibly as a meat shield. And like I'm already, you know, saying that I don't feel great about Sarah's chances to go far. I think people are going to want her out early. If they're looking to break that up, I definitely can see Sarah being the one that goes first.
The other thing, too, is, as I said, people don't really care for Game Changers that much. And I really don't think, like, if we're talking win equity here, I really don't think that these winners that are on this island are going to want Sarah Lucina, the winner of Game Changers, to represent their season. There's like no chance of that happening.
There's a handful of people that I have on that kind of list of like, this is the season of seasons. They're going to be crowning the champion of champions. And there's like maybe four or five names that I'm like, I don't see it. I really don't.
But I think you guys are thinking about this as like, you know, from the perspective of, you know, fans and thinking about the history of the show. I mean, Brent, nobody knows better than you that on the edge of extinction, Aubrey, David Wright, and
others,
Joe, voted for the person that was on the edge of extinction to win the game. So
here's the thing, though.
But in terms of Brent, yes, we talk a lot about the integrity of the game and how could these people who are the like,
well, we heard from them and, that they just thought it was a whole different game. I feel like we're like, even though Edge of Extinction is in play, I feel like the people on the island saw what happened with Edge of Extinction, and there's no chance of that happening again.
But no, I don't think anybody's going to vote for like, well, like, you know, I was thinking about voting for Sarah, but she won Game Changers, and that's not really regarded as a season that I want to represent.
Right.
Like,
it's what I was saying earlier, that there's not any clear goats in this season. So when you get to the final three, it may come down to just a likability factor besides the gameplay.
And
like,
I think
there is going to be someone you like more.
I also think that, and I know that Final Three has been here since the beginning of time, it seems like, with Survivor, but I feel like Sarah could win a Final Two. I actually do feel like she could win a Final Two next to somebody else who was more unlikable than her. But being in a Final Three lets the people on the jury sort of pick from one of the above. And I don't feel like in a season like this that really works for her.
Yeah. Sarah, last woman winner of the show, Jenny, that if she pulls it off, she could be the next woman winner of the show.
Wow, that is a weird stat that I never considered being a possibility. And I mean, as much as I, you know, want to defend Sarah as a winner in terms of however you feel about her personally and however you feel about that season, I will say that, listen to how everyone talked about Sarah. Look no further than how Andrea Belkey talks. I think that is one of the most, like, Andrea seems just like one of the most nice, friendly, liked people in the community. And the way that she felt about Sarah, I think that means something. Sari liked her. Like,
That's another thing, though. Remember, there was a big moment on Game Changers that brought them together, that core group of people. That tribal council, Sarah broke down, huge emotional moment where she talked about, I'm a person who doesn't have Zeke's in my life, and I met Zeke and I love Zeke. And that one night brought them all so close together. We're going to hope we don't have anything like that this season. So I don't know if that kind of bonding will happen, but you know,
really solidified some relationships in that season. But I just, from everything that I've heard about how people talked about Sarah from that season, those relationships had started before that. I do agree that they really could have gotten strengthened by what they went through together. But like I said already, I really think that there is something about her that doesn't, like you said, Rob, doesn't pop on screen. I talk about her tone of voice. There is something about her that is very likable to people. But I think that, again, everyone knows that was her game. And I don't think that these people are going to be fooled into thinking that they are Sarah's it girl, or guy, or whoever on this season. And so despite it being an impressive run for her in Game Changers, I just don't know what she does to go far in this particular season.
Hell yeah. Another big ally for Sarah is Denise Stapley. We talked about this the other night when we did the Denise preview, but both coming from the same place in Iowa. That could be I don't know how many people know that connection. I feel like that could be a big one for Sarah.
Cedar Rapids was also an answer on Jeopardy last night, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yes, it was.
I think Denise and Sarah could be on good terms, but I'll raise you Danny and Sarah. I think those are two people who can get along super well because neither of them have a lot of connections outside of like the Survivor realm. Like, when have you ever seen Danny at a Survivor event?
I've never met Danny in my life.
So I could see her kind of looking for somebody who's similar to her from the Midwest, maybe share some of the same values and family, whatever. I think they could get along super well. And Danny can give Sarah the advice of like an old school player, and Sarah can kind of bring in that new school thing going on. I think they could be an interesting duo.
Fire tokens to not see that.
Wow, are you really down on Danny Boatwright, Matt?
No, just the two of them together, like something I need to spend time on.
Like, I'm high on Danny Boatwright, like, just because I like her, and I haven't seen her since I was like 20 or something.
But yes.
What does that even mean?
Kalish math. Okay. Yeah. All right. Anybody else gunning for Sarah Lucina that we can see here on the board?
I mean, do even the new players want to work with her that bad?
I think that they do. Don't forget that she won season 34. So I feel like that, Adam is super friendly. I'm sure he was very supportive to her and reached out during her win. Ben comes right after I think that I'm sure that, they're from it's not exactly the same place, but, similar part of the country. And then Wendell, I'm sure was greeted warmly by the, as a new winner. And so was Nick, I think, by Sarah. So I think that she has some connections just based on the proximity of when she played with some of these other people.
I just think that they're all closer to each other than with her. The people that are left to be discussed next week, I just think that, Adam and Wendell are just so, for newer winners, I just think are so much better connected with some of these people than Sarah. So I just don't think that they need Sarah.
Sarah, but I think the threat from Sarah is coming from the past of when she played as opposed to coming from the future of when she played.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
Like, I feel like that it's coming more from the people we mentioned, Parvati's and Tims and people that are more of like the, when we go further back in time, to people that are like, I watched her season and I don't trust her, that I feel like that the people that play, and this could be my own personal experience, but I feel like the people that played before you watch you with a different eye than the people that played after you, that might have a little bit more like give you the benefit of the doubt and want to work with you, as opposed to the people that played before you. And it's like, okay, I know your game. I know you're up to.
Yep.
Okay. All right.
No argument there.
No argument there.
Real quick, Jenny, can we get a star sign on Sarah?
So I have to report that I had like a major, I had to question everything I knew today, because I have spent the last couple of years thinking that Sarah was a fellow Libra, like, you know, Rob, Haley, myself. Yeah. And I keep a spreadsheet, and I only get my data from like Wikia or whatever. And sometimes things change. And at some point, Sarah's birthday changed on the internet, at least. Yeah. And so I had her recorded as a Libra in my spreadsheet for some time. I don't know when that changed. Apparently she is a Cancer. Which makes a lot of sense. Cancers are very like,
who said that, Brent?
Oh, Jesus, Rob.
No.
What?
That was a funny joke. That was a funny joke. But Cancers are very like sensual, emotional people. Yes. And so it makes sense to me that Sarah thrives in the one-on-one connections. I can definitely see that from a Cancer. You know, the emotional way that she used, you know, like the bracelet and the ring, mm-hmm. and like these physical pieces with her relationships, the way that she used that, that emotion, the connection to home. Cancers are very like homebody type people. Makes a lot of sense why she's not very big in the community. Anyway, so I thought she was a Libra until today. She is a Cancer. Or maybe it's all wrong.
Okay.
Or maybe you all think it's bullshit. So, I'm sorry.
All right. So does that figure prominently, like in a good way for her, or an
or? So the most winning element of Survivors is Earth. So the most winning sign is Capricorn. Capricorns represent have the highest representation of winners. And then Earth signs in general, which is Capricorn, Taurus, and Virgo, have the biggest representation. So water doesn't, Cancer is a water sign. They're not super high up in the winners. So I don't know what that means for her. It means that she's good at making emotional connections. Mm-hmm. Whether that is going to be the key to success in this particular season, okay. I'm not sure.
I've heard that before.
Actually, let's do our Sarah prediction.
Are you your Cancer? Oh, no, you're Leo, aren't you?
No. I just meant about Sarah.
Sorry, yes.
Okay. Haley, give a Sarah prediction.
I think she's going to at least make the merge, if not further.
Okay. Sarah at the merge, and watch out for her. I think she's somebody who could win those challenges that are stand in one place. Did she win a lot of challenges in Game Changers? I'm trying to remember.
She's never won an individual immunity, I believe.
Interesting. Gosh. As a member of the Braun
Tribe. She was winning. She won a lot of tribal immunities. She didn't go to a lot of early tribals, mm-hmm. in Game Changers. But
okay, Jenny, what's your prediction on Sarah?
I think she's pre-merge.
Pre-merge. It's tough to shake that target when it's on your back, Matt.
Pre-merge.
Pre-merge. And Brent, what do you think?
3 for 3. Pre-merge.
3 for 3 on the pre-merge.
3 for 4, right?
What am I?
Why you were not with us, so you don't
know. I know, we said 3 for 3.
Yeah, sorry.
What am I, just like the show?
There was some symmetry because it went like pre-merge. So, yeah.
Fine, I'll just leave.
And the people in the chat that are bitching about astrology, if Rob's going to ask me what people's signs are, I'm going
about
to.
It, but I feel like Jenny's prepared to talk about
it. If I have something, I can tell you what color their hair is, too. Like, exactly. Whatever.
It's fun and kitschy, and it's interesting to like just segue to for a second. Yeah. Like, yeah. Calm down, people.
So calm down.
Take it easy, everybody.
It's all going to be okay.
Okay. I'll say, I feel like that the arrow is pointing down on Sarah. Not because she's not good, but just because I think that people are going to be way too focused. I really feel like I was listening to Sarah's interview today, and I just felt like that she's like going in hoping that people are going to forget about their previous game. And I just, you know, I can't help but feel like, yeah, I kind of felt that way too back in Survivor All Stars.
Right.
Like, people don't forget. They remember this stuff, and it's
especially, just didn't see. So sorry.
They can trust you. It's tough. It's tough to win that back. They might like you, but they might not trust you.
Yeah, she's like guns a-blazing into the season for some reason. I don't know why she feels like she's got this like loud energy about her. I don't know why she is coming in with this, but I don't think it's going to work.
Let's hope for her sake that that was just like indicative of that interview specifically and not how she's going to play the overall game, because she has to know that's not a winning formula.
Maybe it's like some sort of Freaky Friday thing with like her and Tony. And Tony's like really relaxed.
Right?
And
that's
like
what's happening. He's
like sucked up all of his like, you know, neurotic energy or something. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Natalie next, and then we'll go to Jeremy, because then we can talk about season 29, and then Jeremy also then has the season 31 stuff to add on to that. But let's talk about Natalie. Haley, were you a Twinny fan from The Amazing Race?
I wasn't. And spoiler alert, when they went out first in All Stars, I was like, yay, I don't have to deal with them all.
I believe that was also in 2014. I believe that was in the spring of the year that she ended up winning Survivor. I think that was all in the same year.
Yeah, but like, and I don't think I'm alone in that. I think a lot of people were anti-Twinny about around then. And then all of a sudden she comes in and plays Survivor, and I don't think anyone thought either of the twins were going to do well in Survivor. Mm-hmm. And then so when Nadia went out so early, I think we're all like, well, Natalie's pretty close behind. So when she pulled out a lot of really excellent and cool and fun moves in the later half of the season, and when she won, it was such a satisfying win. Like, we haven't seen what feels like a very satisfying win in a while, and I think, like you said, 2014 was really, you know, a great time to be a Survivor fan.
It was a great year. Yeah, the Natalie Anderson run in Survivor of San Juan del Sur was really so interesting. You know, she starts off she loses her twin sister in the very first episode, but then her and Jeremy are, you know, and Jeremy loses Val early on, and they're tight allies, and they're separated at the swap, but then they end up coming back together at the merge, and there's a whole, you know, it looks like Jeremy is going to go out, but then it's actually Josh that goes out, and he's, and everything is looking good. And then Jeremy gets blindsided, and Natalie ends up going on, I have to get revenge, but I have to let these people think I'm working with them. And it is a slow and methodical revenge that she takes on John Mish and Jacqueline and all Alec Christie, all the co-conspirators along the way to ultimately win. And now she's back, Matt.
I am so excited for this. Natalie is the reason I'm on this podcast. She's the one of the names that I wrote down that I was most excited to talk about, to see here. Everything Haley just said about how, you know, that was such a feel good win. I loved that season at the time. I still love it so much to this day, just watching it as it played out. And you had those two big players with Josh and Jeremy, and one of those guys are going to win. And then they both go out and you're like, oh, wait, they're not going to win. So who is going to win? Is it John? Is it Missy? And then it starts to become a little bit more clear over time that Natalie is somebody playing a good game. And going into the season as somebody who watched The Amazing Race, like, you're not expecting that the Twinnies are going to do well. You're not expecting much from them. You're just, you know, they were fun characters on The Amazing Race. They brought them over to Survivor. Makes sense. But then as the game starts to, you know, get towards the end, and you see all these great moves that she's making and how she's thinking, like, she's playing like a strong player. And it just, it's impressive and it's fun. And just by the time the finale comes around and you see the entire jury just applauding her and giving her all this respect, and every time that she explains a move that she just made or that something that happened, they're all smiling because they're like, damn, how did we let that one happen? Like, how did we let that get by us? It's just so much fun all around. And as somebody who just loves Natalie so much, I'm so excited that she's back. Part of me doesn't even want to imagine how she's going to do this season, because it's just my memories of her are so good, and I'm just afraid that they might not, you know, I don't want anything bad to happen to her.
Yeah, but it's like sport, though, Matt. Like, you know, Janet Lin said in figure skating that everything is sport. Nothing can be taken away from you. Like, we will always have that. Yes. Like, even if she falls on her face in this season, we will always have
what
that.
What's those memories?
Astros said.
The thing that I really appreciate about Natalie is the fact that she is an emotional person like I am and wears her heart on her sleeve. But she was able to keep her emotions in check when she got done so dirty by John and Jacqueline. People forget, maybe you guys don't forget, but fans forget, that Jeremy and Natalie gave up their reward on a yacht to John and Jacqueline to thank them for their votes at the previous tribal council. And then John and Jacqueline decided to pay back Natalie and Jeremy by blindsiding Jeremy at that famous tribal council where he went out and couldn't believe it. And then, like Rob says, it's literally like Dexter, where like the anti-hero, although in this case Natalie's definitely a hero, was like working behind the scenes to like kill all the people who betrayed her and had done her wrong.
It's a great
story.
And
it was so great to watch. So I honestly, I know that there have been a bunch of alpha guys who've had some interesting in-game runs on Survivor, but for my money, like, I'm with Matt on this one. Nobody touches the, like, final nine stretch that Natalie had, from losing her ally in Jeremy, obviously losing her own sister in the beginning of the game, and, like, calling out Rocker. Like, she played from the front. She didn't play in the back. She played from the front and still got it done. So I was so here for her win. And it annoys me that was a blood versus water season, because she should have won unanimously. Like, even John Mish is, like, you know, nodding his head when Natalie is explaining her moves. But obviously he can't vote for her because, you know, Jacqueline is up there or something. And
yeah,
he has
but
to
Reed
vote
didn't vote for her.
Petty
against Missy.
Who? I don't even know.
For
sorry.
Jacqueline,
yeah,
that was so bizarre. Yeah.
One of my favorite moments was, you know, Natalie had the idol and Jacqueline had been kind of screwed over by Missy and Baylor. And, you know, she had come up with this plan and Missy and Baylor thought Natalie was on their side, and she gets up and, you know, takes her idol to Jeff. And then she turns around to Jacqueline and says, "Did you vote for who I told you to vote for?" And Jacqueline says, "Yes." And I think, and then she plays the idol for Jacqueline. And then did Baylor go? I don't remember.
Yeah, Baylor went.
Incredible tribal council.
It was a great move, because not only did it get her to where she wanted to go, but the jury saw her making that move, which I think was incredibly important to her game. You know, the jury doesn't see a lot of these moves because they're back on the beach, but this was a move that was like, hey, I told you to vote for her. So did you do it? Yes, I convinced you to do that. Well, then I'm going to save you. It's like a 2-for-1 move.
Yeah, it really is. And it wasn't, people think like, oh, she had an idol, she played on Jacqueline, but she knew everyone was voting for Keith. Like, that wasn't without risk. Like, there was a way for Jacqueline to technically betray her by also voting for Natalie and then causing a tie. Maybe they would have sent Natalie home because she didn't play the idol for herself. Like, there were ways for that to go wrong. And she still had the cojones to go for it and put herself in position to get the win. And I just absolutely loved it. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find somebody in the RHAP community who didn't love that tribal council and everything that it begat. So I'm feeling great about Natalie, but I'm also worried that some of her more interesting and television worthy moves might be remembered well by people on this cast. I'm nervous about that.
I don't know. This is such a weird season in terms of talking about it, where I feel like it is not a celebrated season at all. Like, you know, I think that Jeremy ends up getting a ton of credit for second chances when he comes back and he wins. But I feel like that for whatever reason, and I always theorize that it was because Natalie was somebody who came from the Amazing Race, and that they weren't like proud of her as a winner because she was somebody that was from one of the other CBS shows that came on, although they really loved Beast Mode Cowboy when he came through.
So bizarre.
But they never, even at the reunion, they couldn't wait to start talking about, hey, we got to talk about what's coming up, Survivor, Worlds Apart. Like, do we have any lawyers in the audience? Like, they were they went right into hyping the next season.
Matt, Rob, it's just boggling to me that I don't understand. Natalie was one of their best winners ever.
They didn't appreciate her.
And then she was funny too. Like, remember when she was like holding the thing up and she like tried to spit, but then the spit went all over herself.
That's a challenge. Where Wes Nail is asking Jeff Probst about the bacon, and that's a, you know, a really great challenge. She's not really a celebrated winner. I think that she came close to coming back for Game Changers, as Jenny had brought up earlier in the show. I'm not sure how many people really know a ton about Natalie Anderson. Matt, do you feel like that people are looking at her as like, oh, we gotta watch out for her? I think that maybe as a challenge beast, I think they're saying like, oh, we gotta watch out for her, she'll win all the challenges. But I don't think that people really look at her as, oh, she is an elite Survivor winner.
I think for the majority of them, I agree. I don't think that most people will look at her that way, and that should do well for her. But I do think there are some people who I specifically, because I just listened to Sophie's interview. Sophie's somebody who calls out, you know, I was just kind of like rewatching some seasons before we left, and like, Natalie Anderson, that's a smart cookie out there. Like, she knows what she's doing. You don't think back at that season and think like, oh, Natalie was she was on top of all of those moves that she made towards the end of the game. So, you know, if I'm sure Sophie's not the only one, but she is the only one who at least mentioned it in that interview. Mm-hmm. I have to hope that people aren't thinking like that, because they are surrounded by such like even bigger sharks than Natalie. It's, you know, there's a lot of players who are remembered for their great gameplay, of course, in the season. I don't know if Natalie is going to be the top of the list, but she's definitely up there.
I feel like that's not a great relationship. I feel like that Sophie, Natalie Anderson, I don't see them getting along.
I'm sure they've both been to the same know-it-alls, though, right? No, Natalie came to like two of them, and Sophie.
I used to ask Natalie Anderson, so are you going to be in the wine and cheese now that I remember her saying like, oh no, they don't invite me to this stuff. I just feel like that she's at home with more of like the blue collar beer drinking, fellow players that we're talking about on this panel.
I totally agree with that. I feel like the people that she's more likely to work with would be like, you know, Ben Driebergen and Nick Wilson and Wendell. Like, these are the people that I feel like that Natalie could work with. Not that Wendell's necessarily blue collar, but I feel like that he could hang with that crowd.
Brent.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah, he's always so suave to me that I always like feel like he's a little bit more metro. Anyway, the point being that I feel like she has a lot of options to choose about who she wants to work with. The thing that I think a lot of people don't really understand about Natalie is that, as Rob notes, it was really methodical. Like, this is what I'm currently having a problem on in Sequesters, that people aren't thinking ahead. And Natalie was the queen of thinking ahead in terms of like realizing that she needed to get rid of Alec and fake it so that like John didn't have power over her to move forward into the final six, and then she needed to get rid of John at the final six, and how to do that. She went on that, as I reminded in the chat, the spaghetti reward with John and Jacqueline, where she like schmoozed them the whole day right before she was going to blindside them, and then on to keeping Jacqueline in the game at the final five to make sure that she wouldn't be voted off by Missy and Baylor at the final four. Like, everything had a plan with Natalie. It was like such a great season. It's honestly mystifying to me that CBS, considering they don't have tons of women and also don't have tons of women of color as winners, for them not to celebrate her more. But let's hope she fixes that this time by winning this season.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's not looking like, I don't know how great I feel about her chances. And that's what I'm afraid to talk about here, just because another thing that she brings up is she's talking about how, you know, Parvati flirts with all the guys and that's how she plays the game. And she's saying, well, I'm just like, I'm one of the guys. I'm just, you know, I bro down with all the guys and whatnot. So I don't know. Is she like going into it with this mindset of I'm only
similar from how what got Nadia in trouble at the tribal council, that she got voted out?
Yeah. So, I mean, if she's going in with that kind of strategy and like not paying enough attention to the women in her tribe right away, then that's not going to be good. But she also said, I'm all about girl power. I'm happy to work with them, too. So I don't know. I feel like it could go. Sorry to sound like Kelly. I could go either way here, but
don't forget, Brent is here. You're going to be a fancy fencer, I know, Matt.
No, but it's
Matt. Just like have the balls to go for it. Say, you know what? She's going to the final three. That's what's happening with Natalie.
No, because that's like, my prediction is the other way.
Oh, really?
And that's where I'm leaning.
Early.
I don't know.
No way. I feel like that her and Boston Rob are like perfect. I feel like Natalie would work great with Boston Rob. If she's on the same tribe as him, I feel like that they would like go together like peas and carrots. So
I keep trying to tell myself that she has the ability to make people fall in love with her, as all of us did as fans watching
and
the game.
As Miss Survivor.
Trying.
Of course, yes. So, I mean, if she can work that charm on anybody out there, just keep them laughing. She's funny. Keep them laughing.
It's so natural.
Everybody is hysterically laughing anytime they're around her. So if she can keep that kind of energy, I think she'll be fine.
She hasn't been on the podcast in a long time, but whenever I talk to her, I can't stop laughing. She's Natalie, what do you think about this? Natalie, what do you think about this? And she has me rolling whenever we get to talk. Haley, how do you think that we've talked more about her game in season 29? How do you think that she's going to come back and play here in season 40?
Someone in the comments I saw said that she won't be afraid of making big moves because she's already gone out early in one of these shows. And it's true. Like, I feel like she's not going to be afraid to go out.
That was her sister.
No, but like in the Amazing Race, she went out early.
Yes.
But, you know, and people forget that she also has like 3 seasons of reality television behind her. I think that's
right. Oh, sorry. You may be right. I can't get Amazing Race.
Technically, right now she does.
One Survivor. This will be 4 for her.
Okay. Yes. Sorry. So I think that's a really big advantage for her. Like you guys said, I think once you get on the island, people are going to love her. They're going to love having her around. She's
a good worker.
She's a hoot. She's a good worker. She's a great athlete. So you're not going to vote her out in the first, you know, a couple of weeks because you want that kind of strength on
her. And she's not overly sneaky. Like, I mean, if anybody is scared of Natalie Anderson, I feel like they're at least going to recognize the fact that in many ways her hands were tied mm-hmm. and what she had to do in Blood versus Water. I mean, she couldn't take John and Jacqueline any further in the game. She couldn't. She had to betray Missy and Baylor at the final 5 because she didn't want to go into the final 4 with a couple. I mean, like, I'm sure she didn't want to betray them, but she had to from a numbers point of view. So I feel like if she can sell it that way, she'll be fine.
Yeah, and I just think there's a lot bigger targets here than her. It's hard for me to see a scenario where they go, Natalie's the one we got to get out right now.
I don't see it either.
Yeah.
I think she's going to at least make it past the merge. I'm really hoping she does because she's going to be a really fun player to watch in this situation.
It's interesting. I want to see her play with Sandra. I don't know if that's because I don't know the time, but I want to see her.
I think that they have a lot in common. They're both people who are outspoken and straight shooters. And I think that they would, and both of them are not bougie, that they're both going to, they're going to get along well, and they're going to have a lot in common and be able to be very relatable to one another.
Who's one person on this cast that is not going to like Natalie? I'm scrolling through it and I can't see one person who's like, if Natalie, you know what? Maybe not. Except maybe Sophie.
But if Natalie's going into it saying she's worried about Parvati and she doesn't like the way Parvati plays the game, that's what worries me because I don't want Parvati on my bad side on any Survivor season.
Yeah.
So that's,
but Natalie doesn't care.
Did Parvati say that about Natalie?
No, she said that she doesn't like the way Parvati plays the game. And if that gets out,
talking about Parvati as saying that she really respects her. Like, I didn't love how Natalie talked about Parvati and like the flirt game. Like, and she does that trope that I love Natalie. Natalie was my winner pick. I don't like changing my winner picks. I didn't love some of the stuff I saw in the interview today, but she did that thing where it's like Matt already mentioned, like, oh, I'm kind of like a guy's girl, like, you know, playing down, like, oh, I'm not like the other girls. Like, she didn't actually say that, but it was that similar kind of thing that I didn't love that for her. However, she's just so naturally charismatic without trying. There's something about when she talks, the way that she is, she's just unapologetically Natalie Anderson, and in such a likable way that it's like you can't even be mad. And the way that she was able to get through her season betraying people but having an excuse, I've never seen John Wick, but I feel like
it was John Mish.
I was like, John Wick, who's that?
Isn't that a movie?
Doesn't John Wick, like, his dog dies or something and then he like kills a bunch of people? Like, that's like what I think.
Spoiler,
about.
I don't know.
Sorry. Okay. Well, it's an old movie and I haven't seen it, so I'm sorry for nothing. But, I just think that she was able to, like, you know, betray people in a way where it was like, you're absolutely justified for doing this. And like, she was driven by losing Nadia. She was driven by losing Jeremy. And I think that that's something that people will remember, is that like, she, when she has someone she picks as her person, her 20 or her honorary 20, that she's a ride or die for that, yeah, for that person. So on the, you know, on the flip side with someone like Sarah, who we've already discussed, where she was would betray absolutely anyone. Mm-hmm. What Natalie did was we never saw any sign of her turning on Jeremy. So it was when, you know, and Jeremy was her person. And when Jeremy got blindsided, that's when she was like, all right, like time to get dirty. And so I think that could really help Natalie in that she doesn't have this schemy air to her that some of these other players really
do. It's so interesting to talk about her in comparison to Sarah that we just got into talking about, where it's like, oh, Sarah is a backstabber, but Natalie is loyal. Well, you know, they both like had to stab a bunch of people in the back to get to the end. But because it's sort of like the narrative is this was vengeance. This was that Natalie is fiercely loyal. And Sarah just backstabbed everybody who she was working with, when it's probably a lot closer when you look at it. But it's just
that perception is so important. Mm-hmm. And I really think that people will remember that. And like everyone has already said, there's just so many other big names that I just... You know, even me, where I loved Natalie, I loved that season, and I was so happy when she won. Rewatching some of the, you know, some of the highlights of that season, like I almost forgot how impressive it was. And I just think that some of that amnesia about that time in Survivor can actually, you know, not every person going out there rewatched all of these seasons going into it.
Since she played.
Yeah, I really think that she, I'm very being very hopeful. Like I said, she was my winner pick, and I'm not going to change it. But I'm really, really rooting for her. And if she could tone down the parvity stuff and maybe just not say that to anyone else, that would be ideal.
So, all right, here's Natalie. We are going to talk about Jeremy in a couple of minutes, but that she has this key ally from her first season. Matt, this is huge. Are they going to be seen as a potential pair that also needs to get broken up? And if so, like Tony and Sarah, could it be Natalie that is the person who ends up getting knocked out to break up Jeremy and Natalie?
Maybe. There's so many pairs in this season that it's hard to say like which one is going to be the most threatening out of all of them. I mean, Robin, Amber, Sandra, this, that, whatever. So I don't think that Jeremy. What, Haley?
I was going to say, like, Jeremy and Natalie are the ones who you're worried about when there's literally a married couple here.
I thought you were going to yell at me for
something. No. I totally agree with you. Mm-hmm.
I don't think that they're going to stand out as the biggest threat or the biggest pair. There will definitely be a point where they do need to get broken up. But I also feel like, I mean, we'll get into more of the Jeremy stuff soon, but Jeremy is somebody that I'm very high on this season. And I think a lot of people are also going to recognize that Jeremy is potentially more of a threat, I think, in the long run than Natalie is. So while Natalie may be the more volatile, like big mouth and all that kind of stuff, Jeremy is somebody that you need to look out for.
Okay. Who else could Natalie be working with? Brett, do you see any other natural allies for Natalie here?
I mean, Danny Bowright, I feel like, would be a natural ally for Natalie because she needs allies herself. Mm-hmm. And as I said before,
sporty.
I feel like Natalie has so many options, maybe too many options. I mean, maybe you can't ever have too many options in Survivor, but she's bound to make someone upset if she has everybody coming to her. Again, she's 5 years ago, real time. Like, not many people remember what she did. It was great, but even then, I feel like so many of her moves were forced. Like, her hand was forced in what she had to do, even if she did do them brilliantly. So I gotta feel like she's got a really above even shot here.
Jane, she has another fellow Jersey girl in Michelle.
Yeah, that was someone I thought of. I think that they're very different, but I also, the more I think about it, I can see them really getting along. I think that, I mean, you guys will talk about Michelle, but I think that Michelle comes in with a lot of options, and I think that there are going to be people clamoring to pick up Michelle. Yeah. Natalie, I definitely think, is someone that would really benefit from having an ally like Michelle, and they do have that, you know, New Jersey connection. The other thing that I wanted to note, I don't know, this is obviously a couple of years ago, but in the Game Changers podcast that she did with you, Rob, Natalie was rooting for Sarah. says she does CrossFit as well. Oh. So she was like, she said, if I had played, I would have worked with Sandra and Tony. I would, you know, kept us together and taken out all these little people. Now that Sandra and Tony are gone. So this was the point. I think the podcast was like after Haley and Ozzy went, she was rooting for Sarah and she mentions it various times throughout the podcast. Her only real reasoning was that she does CrossFit and she's like an athletic girl and she's strong and stuff like that. I have no idea if they've ever met or connected since then, but I do think that is something to note, that she was rooting for Sarah and Game Changers.
Okay. All right. You want to do predictions for Natalie Anderson?
Sure.
Matt, where's Natalie Anderson ending up?
I'll go with the optimistic side of me and say somewhere in the middle of the merge, like not at the merge, a little bit after the merge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Brent, how about you?
I think she goes far. I really do.
Did she win? You see her at the end?
Yeah, she can win. There are people who I have on my list who cannot win. She is not one of those people. She can absolutely win if she's sitting in the final three. Depends on who she's up against and what she's done to get there.
Okay. Jenny.
I mean, I made her my winner pick before, like weeks ago or possibly months ago. And I'm not going to turn back on that. So I think that I'm going to be optimistic, like Matt just said, and I am going to picture her going far. And I agree with Brent that she's absolutely someone who, if she can get to the end, that she wins. So,
okay,
I'm going to stay optimistic.
All right. And Haley, how about you?
I think she's going to make a deep run. And I feel like even if she does get voted out, she would kill it on Extinction Island. Edge of Extinction. I think she'd be really good on there. I think people would like her and I think she'd be good at the competition. I feel like she'd search for whatever she had to search for. So even if she gets voted out, I don't think it's over for her.
Yeah. She's scrappy.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Scrappy.
The panel loves Natalie Anderson.
Big Natalie. Guy.
We do.
Yeah. I'm trying to imagine the scenario for her where it goes poorly. The only thing I could think about is if, you know, it's her and Jeremy and if Natalie wasn't around, Jeremy would be my person. That's the only way I really feel like that this goes south for her. I think that she can't hold back in the challenges. Like, I could see her coming out and being somebody who wins a couple of immunities after the merge, and then people say, "Oh, we have to vote out Natalie."
Yeah,
no,
and then
she
gets back in through extinction.
Yep, she's got a lot of outs here.
We are Standersons here on the round table.
She's so much fun. Okay, all right.
What if like the more recent female winners, as in the two of them, are worried that, or maybe they're upset that they never got a chance to win this Survivor, and they take that out on her.
I think they're gonna take it out on Natalie Anderson.
Yeah, as the reigning Miss Survivor. Like, what if Michelle and Sarah are both like,
we didn't even get an opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Michelle could have made a run.
And then we can also blame it on you, Rob, in case that happens.
Yeah, that's right. Blame it on me.
Why did you stop doing it again? I forgot about Miss Survivor until you just brought it.
Reasons.
A little bit. A little bit.
Came up in Survivor Cambodia.
I wonder how many of your listeners were around during the Miss and Mr. Survivor days.
Yes.
I think I was part of RHAP for like 2.5 years before I really realized, I'm like, oh, that's a thing? Like that happens? Like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, wow, it's a really big deal. And then it went away.
Come on, Dwayne, let's go!
Okay. God, I was not prepared for
that. Sorry about that. Okay, all right.
Wait, Rob, don't you want to know what Natalie's
sign is? Oh, yes. Okay, so what?
She's an Aries. She's an Aries.
Oh, wow, she is such an Aries.
Right?
Who's the older sister, Natalie or Nadia?
I think Nadia is.
Okay.
I'm just guessing. I feel like I've heard that it was Nadia, but if I'm wrong, then I had a 50% chance. She's an Aries, very fiery, blunt, passionate kind of person. Like Haley just said, she's textbook Aries. So,
okay.
I love Natalie. I'm so excited to see her play again.
Now, the man who stumped for Natalie said, come on, give it to Natalie. Jeremy Collins is here. He's not here. He's not here. He is going to be on this season. Jeremy, who was the person who came in, he was the firefighter who came in hot into Survivor San Juan del Sur, wanted to surround and drown, wanted to make a big alliance with everybody that was in his tribe. He ran into the Christie brothers. They tested his patience. He survived a mano a mano showdown with Josh, only to be blindsided and sent to the jury. And ultimately, Natalie was able to get her vengeance for Jeremy. He comes back into Survivor Second Chances and then is everybody's best friend. Everybody loves Jeremy. He even ends up playing an idol on Stephen Fishback for some reason. He ends up working with Spencer and Tasha and gets to the end. Val tells him they're having a baby boy. Baby boy. he has another baby boy since then. And now Jeremy wins 10-0 in Survivor Cambodia. And now here he is back 9 seasons later. Okay.
And he's going to do it again.
Oh, my God. I love it.
All right.
My winner pick.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, Matt, tell us why are you feeling so good about Jeremy?
The same reasons I felt good about him in Second Chances. I picked him in that season. Probably the only winner pick that I've ever gotten, unless I'm forgetting. But he's just the perfect kind of player to go into a season like this. You know, he's a good player, but he doesn't stand out as one of the biggest threats for some reason. I don't understand why it's like that. But, you know, he says his game is I play for my family. I'm just here for them. And, you know, he's calm. He's mellow. He's somebody good to work with and just everything about his game tells you that he's going to last long. And when he can get good allies underneath him, like he did in Cambodia, takes him all the way to the end.
Yeah, and he's got twice as big of a family as he had when he played in Survivor Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw a little bit of water on that. I feel like Jeremy would be an outstanding winner of this season, and he may yet win, but I have to believe that the people who are playing on this season are smart enough to realize that if Jeremy is anywhere near the final three, he is such a salt of the earth kind of guy. There is no way they're beating him. I disagree with Matt in that I think that they will realize that Jeremy is there and is a massive threat to win the game. Like, he was able to slide by in Second Chances because people didn't realize that, like, it just didn't dawn on them that Jeremy sitting in the final three, obviously he's going to win. He's just like somebody you like and you just want to give the money to. He's such a great social presence. That is not going to happen this time. He is going to have to fight tooth and nail. I think he survives for a while. I think that he's not sneaky, so I feel like other people around him will go out. But I do feel like once it gets down to like final eight, final seven, then he's going to have to work. But in modern day Survivor, as noted on a previous podcast, I can't remember where maybe it's the preseason podcast. I can't remember. But like with all the advantages and idols and, you know, fire making that's in the game, that might be all he needs to get to the end is just get him to the final eight, final seven. And he's got a chance. So I have to believe if they have a chance to get rid of him, they're gonna.
He did have two idols in season 31. Could not find the idol. And he went to go look for it in season 29. But he's gotten better at that. Haley, what's your reaction to Jeremy Collins here?
I am really excited to see him back. I think he's a fun player. I think he's a smart player. He gives great confessionals. I'm excited to see him and Natalie team up again to see what happens there.
Yeah.
I think he could go far. I do worry just a bit for him. But
what's the concern?
I'm not even sure. It's just that he is so smart and he's so great. And I think he's very charming and people like him. But like Natalie, I think there are bigger targets around than him. So I'm hoping
that's wishful thinking. I really feel like of the people who are on the show,
yeah,
he has to be top three in terms
you're
of
right,
somebody
you're right.
You do not want to be sitting with in the final three.
No, I agree with that. And that's kind of my apprehension with Jeremy. But I just like him so much.
I think there's a couple different ways to look at it where I feel like that he is a threat in terms of like, well, I'm not going to the end with Jeremy, but he's not Boston Rob. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not somebody that it's like, all right, hey, everybody, all right, this is an easy one. Go after Jeremy at this vote. So I think that he is not somebody you would want to go to the end with, but I don't think that he is somebody that anybody is going to feel like is especially threatening.
He's set up well. I think he's got the new people on his side if they need him. And he's obviously got connections to the older players and the whole Boston Rob and poker thing. It sounds like he and Tyson might be some kind of thing that'll happen out there. So if he's got these connections to bring him far into the game, and you know what, even if they vote him out, Jeremy is the exact kind of person that could come back from the edge of extinction and, you know, find an idol and find his way in all the way to the end. So I think the twist of the season works in his favor. He'll be able to figure out the stupid fire tokens, and he's got friends.
He's a fire man.
There you go. I see it looking up.
Yeah. Okay. Jenny, what's your take on Jeremy Collins?
I love him so much. And I'm like already getting emotional just thinking about it because I am an emotional person apparently. Mm-hmm. And rewatching some parts of Cambodia, like hearing the way he talks about Val, hearing the way he talks about his family.
Yeah.
He's an incredible human, and he's one of the winners that I've just never been so happy for them. Just like not just happy about the game, like their win from the game perspective or an entertainment perspective or like satisfying, like genuinely happy for him as a person. And I've never met him in my entire life. And I think that is something to note, because Jeremy is one of those people that I put in a separate category of, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, that put them in any situation in playing Survivor and just their natural personality will take them far. Tyson's another person that I list in that. They're just the natural charisma without trying. Jeremy is so likable. And I think that there's just something so genuine about him, and he doesn't come off schemey. And even though he, you know, won that season by everyone feeling like he was, you know, their best friend, you know, kind of not exactly like it, but a little bit similar to how Sarah did it. For some reason, it just doesn't have that same feeling of being like, oh, well, like, careful, if you think that you're really like in with Jeremy, he probably has like a bunch of other people that he's also really in with, and he's insulating himself with you.
Yeah.
There's just something about the way that he is. Like, it just does not come off as like skeezy, and like, yeah, he's just so incredible.
I think that helped out with it.
He got lucky on a couple of the people that were his friends got taken out in things that had nothing to do with him. Like, mm-hmm, Andrew Savage got idled out of the game, who was a close friend of his. And then somebody who really pushed for him on the jury. And then Steven ends up getting voted out in a plan that Jeremy wasn't really a part of. So, or wasn't a part of after, you know, Jeremy went out on a limb to save Steven. So he was fortunate in that he didn't have to do a lot of backstabbing, and he had all these great relationships across the board where it wasn't as difficult to untangle as it potentially could have been.
And people remember idol plays, and I really think that it's so helpful that Jeremy played that idol on Steven, whether, you know, mm-hmm, like what that meant for Steven's longevity in the game, and whether that ended up being really key to Jeremy's win in the long run, that's arguable. But I think that just the reputation of being the kind of guy, mm-hmm, that would play an idol on you is so important, because there's just so many other players in this season that you know are always going to be so self-interested. And even though Jeremy is self-interested because he's playing for his family and that's always going to be his thing, that's never going to change, there's a way that he plays and the way that he connects with people, and the very fact that we've seen him use idols to protect an ally, that I'd rather be working with the person that might play their idol on me than the person that I know 100% of the time, even if they don't need to, they're saving that idol for themselves.
Okay. We're all pretty bullish here on Jeremy, except for Brent, maybe. Brent, if this doesn't go well for Jeremy, what does that look like?
Then it's pre it's merge. I think that he would be booted like relatively soon after the merge. So, I don't think there's really
similar
any
to San Juan del Sur.
Yes, and exactly. I don't think there's really any scenario outside of like an idle play that, you know, ricochets off somebody that he could potentially go home pre-merge. I just don't see it. So there's just no reason to get rid of him. Why are you going to get rid of him pre-merge when there's all these other like threats? Jeremy's a really salt of the earth guy. You can trust him. He might play an idol on you. You can like he's loyal. He's not overly sneaky in a way that I feel like other people could be perceived, even though he's obviously someone you're not going to sit at the end with.
Okay.
Something to look out for that came from today's interviews is back when Wendell Holland won his season, he praised a lot of things about Jeremy's gameplay. Jeremy as a person, Jeremy as a player, he just had so much love and respect for Jeremy in every single way. His interview that he gave, he talked a little bit about, I love the guy, but I know he's a threat and I know that I can't take him too far into the game. So
Wendell said that about Jeremy.
Wendell said that about okay. Jeremy. So it's just another one of those pairs where you might think that like there could be a connection there with how well Wendell has spoken of him in the past. But Wendell is somebody who's already acknowledging the threat level that Jeremy has. And I'm sure Wendell isn't the only one. So while it may see, you know, I'm sitting here saying like he's going to go under the radar because that's just how he plays the game. There are people who are at least talking about him, especially somebody who likes him so much. So there is, you know, plenty to keep an eye on. Yeah, that.
But I feel like that's the thing that on Survivor that you almost never see until you get down to like, it's like the final six, maybe seven, that there's never a, like, boy, we all respect this person so much that we have to vote them out early.
No, just to know that Wendell has that thought in his head, like maybe this isn't, you know, my end game plan.
Yeah, that lines up with what I'm thinking. Like I think definitely Wendell would grab onto somebody like Jeremy if he needed, you know, allies in the early going. But there's like once you get down to like final 10, final 9, girl, bye.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's Dom and Wendell. They knew they were going to work together, but they weren't going to the end together. So maybe we get a similar kind of situation.
That would be great.
Okay. Haley, what about some other allies that are out there for Jeremy? We've talked about Natalie. Who are some other friendly faces that could be there for Jeremy?
I think him and Michelle could do well together. I think him and Denise would be a really fun pair.
That's the pair I would like to see. Yeah.
Him and Kim would be a great pair.
Yes. Any particular reason why you highlight Jeremy and Denise? That do they have any sort of shared friends or anything like that?
No, but I feel like they have a shared mentality and they're pretty even keeled. They're going to kind of, you know, think about things. They're not going to react right away when something doesn't go their way or does go their way. I think they could really play off each other well and be able to think plans over and develop things. I think that would be a really fun little pair.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the people that Jeremy has not gotten along with great in the past. Did not love his time with the Christie brothers.
Well, they're dumb. Yeah. Denise is not dumb.
I mean, Jenny, they didn't invite Fabio back for the Winners at War season. Can you see anybody here that would fit the profile? I feel that Keith Nail also was somebody that Jeremy was on again, off again in his seasons. But again, I don't think we have a Keith Nail type either.
No, really don't. I'm trying to think, like, Ben Driebergen, maybe. I don't even know if I see that. I think that honestly Jeremy is just
fine.
That's the thing. Yeah. I'm like trying to think like who's a little bit more of like the like blue collary type.
For the record, I play in a fantasy football league with both of them and they seem like
right. Yeah. I actually forgot about that. Yeah, no, I like that's the thing, and that's because Jeremy doesn't like stupid people, and I'm sorry if you won Survivor and you're being brought home. Yeah, so if you've won a season of Survivor and you're being brought back for Winners at War, you're not dumb. Like, say what you want to say about your game. None of these people are the types of people that in another season where they would frustrate Jeremy. Mm-hmm. I think I can see him getting frustrated by like, you know, unpredictable types. I could maybe see if Tony is off the rails and acting extra, that way, Jeremy could be like, I don't have time for this, but I don't know.
Going back to Mr. Survivor, very iconic Mr. Survivor 2014. It was the three-way debate between Jeremy, Spencer, and Tony.
Wasn't it Vetus and Aris, or was that something else?
That was the year before, wasn't it?
That might have been 23rd. Mr. Survivor 2013. But this was a thing that Tony and Jeremy get into it a little bit. But I think it was really both of them were picking on Spencer.
Sounds about right.
Sounds right, yeah.
Both of them played a season with Spencer. So,
yeah. What a time we all had in 2014.
Along the lines of like the Spencer thing, what do we think about like Jeremy with Adam? I feel like he worked with Fishback, you know, the super fan / emotional guy kind of archetype is right up his alley.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, isn't Adam like, doesn't he play poker or doesn't he do stuff like poker, that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like there's definitely a connection there and he could definitely work with him.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like going to make the most sense for him, but I feel like if that's somebody he can just kind of keep in his pocket, I don't see any reason why not.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's pretty easy. Jeremy, you know, put him with anybody. I think he can get along with anybody. I don't think there's anybody here that's going to really get on his nerve. So I feel like that he has, you know, a lot of runway to work with whatever way he wants to go. Matt, is there any way that could too many people feel like they're working with him? And then it's almost like that it's to quote another person from Survivor San Juan del Sur, a potential sticky situation.
I mean, sure. I guess, you know, since he,
I thought like, he was my best friend.
Yeah. I mean, if he does have friends on both sides of the aisle with the old school versus the new school, I could see Boston Rob being somebody who, you know, both of them are still in the game. He's like, all right, Jeremy, he's friends with everybody. Time to go.
Yeah.
But I think that because he still has a reputation for being a loyal person, that people can still trick themselves into thinking that they're the exception and that the relationship with them is real. And
that's a good point.
Whereas like, you know, with maybe just because we've discussed her tonight, Sarah, where she was, you know, double dealing with absolutely everyone and everyone ended up being like, no, she didn't give a shit about me either. I think that really benefits him because people want to believe, especially with someone as likable as Jeremy, like, God, wouldn't you want to be his number one? So I think that even if a lot of people, if people start comparing notes, possibly that could get him into some trouble, but I do think that people might convince themselves that they are the person that he would play an idol on and that he's truly loyal to. So,
and another thing, this going back to the kids thing, they all have kids, they're all going to be talking about their kids 24/7. Jeremy succeeded in Second Chances because he didn't talk about his kids, he didn't talk about the or maybe he did a little bit, but like he didn't talk about Val,
the unborn one,
and all that, of course. Yeah, so if they're all talking about their kids out there and Jeremy is kind of constantly subtly reminding them that he is the family guy who won the game with that big passionate speech at the end, that's probably not a good idea.
Yeah,
but they all have kids now, and they all have kids.
But like that kind of reminder is not.
Do they have kids?
Some of them have kids.
A lot of them do.
Like there's a Jeremy has four. Doesn't Kim have three?
Kim has three. Jeremy,
Rob and Amber have four. Like there's probably almost exactly the amount of kids. Like you could probably put 20 kids on the cast.
Kids: Nick, Adam, Sophie,
Wendell.
That we know of all these people.
I said Natalie already.
Natalie doesn't have kids.
Does Denise have kids? Oh, yeah, Denise has kids.
Denise has a daughter. Yeah.
Tony has one or two.
Tony has two, I think, now. Yeah.
There's a lot of kids.
Yeah. Well, they're
this like family is going
28 to 48, I think, is the. Yeah. So that's why I don't think that is
Michelle
dangerous as a thing anymore where. And I don't know. I just think it's different. Like the big thing was like, you know, he had his two daughters and he talked about his daughters a lot because I know he talked about how like Spencer was like really bad at like pretending to like connect with people emotionally, being like, cause he just like kept repeating like, oh, and so Jordan is this age and Cameron is this age. Yeah. So I know he talked about his daughters a lot. It was more so that Val was pregnant and then finding out he's finally going to get his first son. Whereas like now he's got two daughters, he's got two sons. Like I think that he might be able to tone that that back. And like, you know, Rob and Amber have a soccer team that they're going to like be trying to play for. So I don't know if that's going to be as dangerous as it was before.
I do think it will be hard for a non-parent to win the season, especially when we're talking about $2 million is a life-changing amount of money.
That's
and not anybody's going to be frivolous with the money that's out there in terms of these winners. But I do feel like that that it would be tough for a non. I'd say maybe Ethan. I think Ethan is like the one non-parent who I could see the jury rewarding.
Yeah, that's a good point, Rob. Honestly, I had forgotten that it's $2 million. Like, I know maybe everybody else didn't, but I certainly did. I was just like in my head thinking about $1 million, and I'm like, oh yeah, it is $2 million this season. So, like, even more so, I feel like definitely the people that are like not so likely to win, like they're really not so likely to win now.
That reminder made me like, I don't like feeling not good about picking Natalie, so I wish that I didn't think about this. That I think that that is a really good point. People obviously they want to give the money to someone that they feel like is, you know, a worthy representative of the season, but I definitely think that besides likability, just feeling good that
she
they're giving money
niece, and she's close to Jeremy's kids, so
and
she has her own business too, so like I feel like that, there's maybe a way that she can circumvent that.
They need to have a purpose, and that's one of the things that's also worried me about Natalie, is that Natalie in her interview was talking about last time I pushed towards the second half of the game, I did it for Nadia. And I always had that motivation of, I want to get revenge for Nadia. And then as Jeremy got voted out, I want to get revenge for Jeremy. And I'm doing this for now, both of them. And coming into this season, she's like, I don't know what I have to play for. She's like, I got to get something to motivate me.
if I ever play, you know, anything, then I'm just going to be like, I just want this money to give my cats like a better life. Like, is that going to go over well? I don't know. I want to foster lots of kittens.
So, you got my vote.
It might be a smart idea for people like, you know, if you're Nick, maybe you say, I want to work with Wendell and Adam or Michelle, or, you know, I want to, if you can sort of like, oh boy, but these people are talking about their kids a lot.
Yeah.
We don't have a chance if we get to the final three that they're definitely going to award it to one of the other parents out there. Maybe us people who are the people who do not have a family yet need to be working together.
These kids are going to run out here and steal all our money.
I do think this came up on Survivor Ghost Island. I think that that was something that I think that I forget if it was something that Bradley was actually talking about, or if it was something that that Dominic was concerned about, that he had heard Bradley might be talking about, of, you know, that we have to vote out the people that have kids or all the parents because we don't have a shot. So who knows? All right. Jeremy Collins, Matt's already calling the shot winner.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm not the only one who wants a woman to win this season, so I'm hoping for that. But my gut, every time that I, you know,
all right,
it goes back to Jeremy.
All right, Haley, what do you think for Jeremy?
I feel good about Jeremy, but I don't feel the greatest about Jeremy.
Okay, Jenny.
We come to you for the really hot takes, Haley.
That's why I'm hot take Haley.
I think that Jeremy can do well in this season. I can see a scenario where he wins. Obviously, I've already called my shot with Natalie being a winner, and I don't see a scenario where both of them. Can they both be winners? I would absolutely love that. So I have to say,
it's $2 million. I don't think they can split it.
Yeah. If only. I do see him making it to the merge, but I might see like a similar finish to San Juan del Sur.
Yeah, I've already said where I'm going. It's like merge boot or a few boots after.
Yeah, and talking it through, I wonder maybe if we could see a scenario that where Jeremy is in good with everybody and people look around and say, oh boy, you know, if we don't knock Jeremy out right here, he is going to win. And, you know, that was kind of what almost happened to him in Survivor Cambodia. That it was Spencer who said, hey, you know, I'm telling you, Kimmy's not with us. And people that Jeremy felt, no, Kimmy's with us. And that was a blindside. And then Kelly Wentworth played her idol, and then Jeremy played his idol, and ended up being a 0-0 tie, and Kimmy ended up going home, which was another ally that Jeremy didn't have the blood directly on her, on his hands, and she was also targeting him, but there was, you know, a shot at him at the final six, and maybe this time around they do get him before he starts to get right into that end game where he's potentially making a fire. So maybe a deep run and then picked off right before he can get close to that final three.
Just FYI really quickly about Jeremy, has he ever played from like the bottom, like the bottom? I just remember like he didn't respond.
He was in Survivor San Juan del Sur. He was in down in the numbers where that it was. There was a point where I think that they could have thrown a challenge that it was because Reed and Josh had been together. Reed and Josh and the Christie brothers were on the tribe. And I think they could have thrown a challenge and voted him out.
Okay. My only point in that was I remember how Jeremy acted when Kimmy betrayed him. He was like, "Oh, you tried to betray me? Okay." Like, I was really
he get hot.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's was like the a Tyson thing. He can be a little entitled at times. So, like,
I want to tell you about some of the text messages I've got from him about fantasy football. He's not as nice as you think, people.
I can explain this. He's a Taurus.
Yes, tell us. Tell us so why.
Taurus can be very stubborn, and they also have a little bit, like, it's, you know, the bull thing. So, right. So they can be a little bit bullheaded, but Taurus are loyal. They are hardworking. The way that, you know, Jeremy talks about his family is so very like Taurus to me. He's protective and loyal, but you know, don't mess with him because he is a little bit bullheaded. So, mm-hmm. You know, that's why you might see Jeremy get a little spicy at times.
Another thing that's great about Jeremy is that he's the only person that refers to Stephen Fishback as Steve. Whenever he mentions Stephen Fishback, he calls him Steve. I don't think Stephen ever said, "Hey, call me Steve." I don't think that. I don't know.
Maybe he's not a Steve.
Maybe Jeremy has a nickname for Jeremy. So, okay, there you go. All right. What a panel tonight. I had so much fun talking about these four.
Great.
Likewise.
Yeah. I didn't get to talk about Survivor very much, so this was great. Yeah. Like I said, lots of fun.
And it was nice that the four that we got to, you know, talk about tonight, they're all kind of connected in a way, like, you know, they all came from around the same time. We've got the two of them, you know, have played with each other. And yeah, it's just like really, I'm so happy to get to talk about these four in particular.
I'm still mad at Haley for how she opened the podcast.
Why would I do?
Because she likes me?
Rob asked who your favorite was, and he said Jenny.
Matt, you know I love you.
Listen.
Matt holds a grudge. Yes.
Kenton
wants a woman to win, okay?
Yes. Yeah, we'll take some questions from the chat if you got them.
I was going to say, and I thought about this too, Kent in the chat says, do you think any of them will raise the flag on the edge of extinction and go home? Kent thinks that they will. I have to say, no freaking chance whatsoever. Like,
someone come back from edge of extinction and win. Like, that's the only example we've seen of it. So you've got to think that they're like, oh, why would I risk it? Like, I'm still in the game. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Especially with the opportunity to win or to get advantages that could help you in the edge of extinction challenge with the fire tokens, that maybe it's not like, well, I'm not athletic, so I can't do it. But maybe there's ways that you could potentially buy your way to the final part, or, you know, some other way to get into the game that's not just winning a challenge.
Nobody's leaving with $2 million on the line.
Yeah.
Not happening.
Yeah.
No way.
Jury.
And you're not going home. Like,
mm-hmm.
How excited are we to watch Rob Boston Rob cast a jury vote?
You feel like he has no chance, Matt?
By the way, I was thinking about this too. You know, they said they're doing Edge of Extinction and they've guaranteed them you'll have at least one chance to get back into the game. That's what Probst said to Dalton Ross. So I am moderately hopeful that they do Edge of Extinction for the pre-merge and then say sayonara, so it's not there for the post-merge.
Abandon it. But what I do hope is that they stop it earlier. I agree with that.
Stop
it
at seven. And no idols. Stop giving them idols.
Don't give them an idol when they come back. Please.
Please. You do more of the like idols that expire at certain times. Like I was a fan of that from 39. If you're going to be giving idols, let's like make them more like time bombs.
Just watch like Chris and Tommy are going to enter the game at the final seven, go on a run.
Okay. Let's see. If we have any good questions,
shade to the questions, Rob.
Yeah, those are really good questions. Pedro says, if Jeremy is a firefighter, can he devalue the other fire tokens? You see what I'm saying, Jenny? Yeah. I'd ask him if we had him, but all right. So
he said he was here.
Okay,
Jenny, what sign is one? Oh, sorry, Jenny, what sign is won the most times?
Capricorn.
Woo!
Yeah, we got a few Capricorns on this cast. Rob and Adam and.
It's because they're so focused on their goals.
That's the thing. Like Capricorns are like they get shit done, you know, and they are also they want that money. Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right. Good to know. Tomorrow night, live at 9 p.m. Eastern, we will be recapping the final week of The Circle and talk about the winner and how it all played out. We got a great panel coming up tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I believe it will be myself and Taryn Armstrong, Kirsten McInnes, and Mary Kwiatkowski, and hopefully the professor Tim Wilson will join us one more time to talk about everything that goes on in the final week of The Circle. And then on Monday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, we're going to talk about all the stragglers, the winner, the one-time players who won in the 30s. We haven't talked about that's going to be Michelle from Survivor Korong, Adam from Millennials versus Gen X, Ben Driebergen. We're going to talk about Wendell Holland and Nick Wilson coming up on Monday night. So tune in for that one, our final preseason roundtable talking about all of the winners. Okay. Haley, what's going on The Bachelor wrap up these days?
There's been a couple champagne accidents over on The Bachelor.
What happened? I'm seeing everything champagne. Can you give us the quick version?
Yes. So Kelsey brought champagne that she's owned for one single year to The Bachelor to share in a special moment with Peter. She got that set up near a fireplace. Hannah Ann came across the champagne. I think she tried to set up a champagne date with Peter as well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say led her to that champagne, told her, pop that bottle. They did. Kelsey got super mad. Later on, Kelsey found Hannah Ann's champagne. They decided to just pop that. And then she made the cardinal mistake of drinking out of a champagne bottle and it just blew up all over her face. Yes. Never yes, do that. If you want to impress, if you want to impress a hot guy on TV, just don't drink straight from a champagne bottle. It doesn't work as well as with other bottles.
Carbonation is a bitch.
Okay. Check out Amy and Haley on The Bachelor Rehab Up. Every week. Have you, this week's show is already up.
Yeah, I saw it in my feed.
Yes, it is. It went up this morning.
In the feed. It's in the feed.
Check it out. Okay. All right, Jenny, what's going on with you?
I don't know. Nothing. What is going on with me, Rob? I'm just hanging out trying to get over pneumonia. And
did you have pneumonia?
Yeah, I went to the doctor finally yesterday. I've got pneumonia. So you know what? I'm podcasting with pneumonia, guys. So maybe you can be nice about my astrology bullshit, okay? Yeah. And if anyone wants to talk about it, you can tweet at me at Jenny Autumn. And other than that, I have nothing going on in my life. So Feel bad for me.
Okay. Matt,
I'm really excited for this season. Sorry. I'm very, very
what's
excited.
What's new with you?
What's new? Not much is new. I am, you know, podcasting about the challenge when that's on, but that's not on right now. The Survivor All-Stars, Mary plugged it, I think, last week. We went back and watched All-Stars. So if you haven't checked that out yet,
what was your inspiration for that?
I've been a big All-Stars fan since that was my first season.
What do you like season. About it? I find that to be a very,
so hard to
likeable
watch.
Season.
It is not a likable.
Listen,
season.
I didn't know you at the time. I didn't know of your game. It was my first season. I didn't watch.
Are you a big Boston
prior.
Rob guy?
Yeah,
a big Amber guy.
It's not even that our Rob lost in such a way that he did. It's that all of the people that I was rooting for got axed, and Boston Rob and his cronies controlled the game.
It was my first season, so I didn't know anybody. I came in loving Rob and Amber because they were running the season and then they won, and that it was just the best feel good story of all time. So Mary and myself, and it seems like more people are coming to us with like, oh, we also kind of like All Stars. Thought it was just me. So apparently there's more of us out there. So that was fun over on Kowski Cast. And, you know, of course, back when this Survivor season starts up again, I guess maybe a little sad to say that I won't be doing the 3-2-1 this season, because I will be doing some power rankings, which I need to talk about every single one of these players. I can't just talk about like 6 a week. So going with the big format this week's season.
Matt, any takeaways from watching Survivor All-Stars again? Anything you've noticed on the rewatch?
Yeah, I took away that I thought Amber needs to get a little bit more credit. Just overall, I think that we got her thought process pretty often throughout the late part of the game, and she was definitely just as much as part of the team as Rob.
Yeah, I thought that too after I watched it again for the evolution of strategy. I do think it's interesting. We talk more about the meat shields in terms of the 30s, but I wonder, you know, how much was Amber sort of like, hey, you know, like I'll go where he's going, and how much was she sort of like, you know, a calculator of, hey, I'm gonna you know, I'll be fine as long as I, you know, put this guy out in front of me, he'll lose, and this is how I'm gonna win the game.
Yeah, she was following along with every step of the way. They made decisions together. She did hold him back at moments where he might have like otherwise been a little bigger, you know, for what he should have been in the game. So she definitely deserves some. How crazy was it to sit down and watch today a preseason interview of Amber for a season? It was just insane to me. I couldn't stop smiling the entire time.
She hasn't aged either. She looks incredible.
She really looks amazing.
Yeah, everyone.
I just could not believe my eyes.
What's crazy to me about it is that she's in there. She is like, oh, you know, nobody's going to believe that. Nobody's going to be looking for me. Nobody's going to expect that I'm here. And it's like, this is the same exact thing that happened last time. You know, these people are like, oh, I can't. Yeah. I have too big of a target. Everybody's coming for me. It's like, yeah, nobody's ever looking for me. We'll see what happens this time. Okay. And Brent, How about you? I know you were so worked up about Sequester.
It's how I watch my reality TV, Rob. It's very hard for me to disassociate myself from my television. Well,
I was laughing because I saw that you were very upset about Sequester, and I saw that Audrey was like, we tried something. Brent's gonna Brent. Yeah, I don't think he's gonna go and take it easy.
I really liked what you said though. Like I told them when I first decided, you know, I told Rob I'd like to cover the show. You're like, you think it's ready to be covered? I said yes, and I'm like, I'm gonna call him as I see him, whether it's good or bad. Like I'm not gonna give the show any special treatment. I'm the same Brent I am on Big Brother. Mm-hmm. You know, I call him as I see him, and I'm the guy on the couch watching it. And some people appreciate it, and some people don't. But I don't expect anyone to like me. That's I am who I am. I'm like Popeye. You know, I am who I am.
See, I want everyone to like me, so I can't relate.
Big Libra energy.
Yeah, big Libra energy.
Big Libra energy. Okay. All right. There you go. All right. We have got so much going on this month, and plenty to talk about with Sequester and all this Survivor stuff going on in our patron groups. A lot of talk this week about all of the events that we have planning for. We have 4 live shows coming up here in season 40, including a big premiere party and RHAP 10-year anniversary in Los Angeles that we're doing. Lots of stuff going on. Patrons are, you know, grabbing up tickets left and right for everything that we're doing. If you want to be part of that RHAP patron community, head on over to robhasthewebsite.com/patron for more information. Thank you guys so much for listening to the podcast. Jenny, Haley, Brent, and Matt had so much fun tonight. We'll be back on Monday with one more roundtable panel. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. We'll be right back.